Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by HealthNetics CBD.
Lady Apple to the inside, street fan Serengeti Empress. Lady Apple gets up. Lady is up by a neck. It's Lady Apple to get the win.
Last year's Ladies Classic was probably Lady Apple's best run of her career. And obviously, we're trying to recreate that again Sunday. I'm extremely happy with how she's been training and how she looks going into Sunday's race.
Greatest Honor has powered past. Inconvenienced around the first turn. He'll win anyway. Greatest Honor, and an impressive winner. He wins a length and a half.
You know, then he came down here and, you know, he was able to beat the horses on the lead after getting knocked around some going into the first turn. And I thought he really finished up well. And I do think it's a little bit of a process with him. But, you know, he's a horse that's going to run that far. He's a national two-turn route horse. And, you know, whether a mile or 16th, we'll probably have to get a little help in front. But, you know, we'll just see from there.
It is Motion Emotion in full stride in the final furlong. She leads by three. Motion Emotion has won it.
What a wonderful opportunity Spendthrift's given us with this filly. She's absolutely beautiful, all class, trains extremely well. She is training exceptionally well, and she does have races to go back on that would could put her in the winner's circle on Sunday as well.
The Great One tries to cling on as Spielberg throws down the gauntlet. Spielberg comes at the Great One. Photo, head-bobbing finish. It's either the Great One or Spielberg.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Whenever the open to your show includes sound bites from Hall of Famers Steve Asmussen and Shug McGahee, you know something big is going on in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Certainly is this weekend. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the first ever three-hour edition of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, ushering in an exciting new era with our flagship program, better known as the show that launched a network, the show that started it all. And this morning and every Saturday morning from here on out, I will take you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. And I have to tell you, I couldn't sleep last night. I tossed, I turned, I couldn't get comfortable, and it had nothing to do with the sleeping conditions, the pillow, the bed, anything like that. I think it had something to do with the theme song from Gilligan's Island. And I know I'm dating myself a little bit there, that three-hour tour, swimming in my head. Couldn't get it out of my head. It didn't work out all that great for the crew from Gilligan's Island, hoping things work out a little bit better over the next 3 hours here this morning. And because of this additional hour, by the way, you will be able to experience the sport of thoroughbred racing like never before. So many of you have already sent me messages telling me how much you've enjoyed the addition of our newest segment, Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, which debuted a few weeks ago. That is just the beginning of a multitude of new ways I will take you inside our sport in the weeks, the months, and years to come. Consider this new three-hour Equine Forum your backstage pass to go behind the scenes. That's the way I want you to look at it, because I am going to take you inside the sport like nobody has ever done before. And today, I will bring you two brand new, never before heard weekly segments, which, quite frankly, I would have never had time to do and include them in a 2-hour show. I'm also now going to give you the chance to be part of the show each week with a brand new call-in segment, which today, by the way, comes your way in the newly added third hour at 10:20 Eastern. So mark that down. If you want to be part of the show, you want to call in and talk racing, weigh in on some of the big prep races for the Kentucky Derby, some of the ones that we've already seen, you want to talk about any industry issues, 10:20 Eastern is when I will open up the phone lines for a 15-minute segment, and we'll take as many calls as we can and let you be part of the show. It truly is a new era on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and it begins right now. To help celebrate this historic show, I'm also going to be joined by a stellar guest lineup. That will not change. You have become accustomed to hearing from the biggest names in racing every week on the Equine Forum. I'll continue that. We'll just enhance the show a little bit with some new segments and take things to a new level. I'm going to kick things off right after our first break in just about 5 or 6 minutes with Jimmy Bell, the president of Godolphin US, the newly crowned leading owners in 2020. That happened Thursday night at the Eclipse Awards. And it was a huge night for Godolphin. It wasn't only about being leading owners. That leading owner title included Essential Quality, who was crowned champion two-year-old male after an undefeated juvenile campaign. Of course, racing in the royal blue colors of Godolphin. Really special night for them. Jimmy Bell going to join me in a few minutes. Jockey Corey Lannery is going to be with me at 8:35 Eastern to look back and talk about, I should say look ahead, talk about his mounts in today's graded stakes at Gulfstream, including the Dale Romans trained Sitting on Go in the Grade 3 Holy Bull. It's a big day for Corey. He has mounts in four of the five Grade 3s at Gulfstream today. Sam Houston announcer Chris Griffin previews tomorrow's Houston Racing Festival, which includes the Grade 3 Houston Ladies Classic, where Steve Asmussen trained Lady Apple is going to look to defend her title. You heard Steve talking about her in the open to the program. And that card also includes the Grade 3 John B. Connolly Turf Cup. And Chris will join me 9 o'clock Eastern this morning. Trainer Mike McCarthy will be with me at 9:40 from California. He'll talk about the return of his talented 3-year-old Rombauer, who makes his 3-year-old debut later today in the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis at Santa Anita. And the trainer they may all have to beat in that race. Doug O'Neill will be with me toward the end of the show in Hour 3 at 10:40. Doug has two horses entered in the Robert B. Lewis, Hot Rod Charlie and Wipe the Slate. And I know, much like every big race in California, it comes down to Bob Baffert. He's in there too. He's won the race something ridiculous, like 8 times. Well, Doug's won it a couple of times too. And his chances with Hot Rod Charlie and Wipe the Slate are pretty good. That's a good field. And that leads me to today's poll question. You can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Which of today's 3-year-old stakes races is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner? And that's assuming the Derby winner is in one of those. Which of today's 3-year-old stakes races is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner? You can choose the Swale, the Holy Bull, the Kitten's Joy, I know it's on turf, but it's a 3-year-old stake, or the Robert B. Lewis. The Swale, the Holy Bull, the Kitten's Joy, or the Robert B. Lewis. Which of today's 3-year-old stakes races is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner? And a quick follow-up, by the way, on my interview. I talked about Dale Romans sending out Sitting on Go in today's Holy Bull. A quick follow-up to my interview with Dale talking about historical horse racing on last week's show. Senator John Schickel, whose district includes Turfway Park, by the way, is introducing a bill on Tuesday to protect historical horse racing and keep the Kentucky Equine Education Project now has a petition on its horseswork.com website where people who live outside of Kentucky but also contribute to the Kentucky horse industry in any number of ways can sign a petition that will be part of testimony at next week's hearing. And they're hoping to get thousands of signatures. So if you live out of state, but you participate in racing here and benefit from being part of this sport in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, go to horseswork.com and help them by signing that petition. It's easy to do. Horseswork.com. And much appreciated for all of that support. And I know the Kentucky industry appreciates it as well. All right, well, again, a really busy show. 3 hours this morning, all the way up until 11 a.m. Eastern. It kicks off with Jimmy Bell from Godolphin. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by HealthNetics CBD. For amazing relief of everyday aches and pains, try HealthNetics premium brand CBD.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 5 black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in 6 Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Healthnetics CBD.
They turned into the short stretch, and Hot Rod Charlie keeps moving up on the outside. Hot Rod Charlie moves up to challenge Jackie's Warrior as the field moves off the turn. Essential Quality is still third and still moving at the leaders from the outside. Final furlong of the juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile. 1 minute 42.09 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Healthnetics CBD on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, expanding the show on this Saturday morning. This is an historic show, the first ever three-hour Equine Forum. This will be the format going forward now, adding that extra hour with you all the way up until 11 a.m. Eastern. That was Kurt Becker with the call of this year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Keeneland. And what a moment it was for Jimmy Bell, for the Godolphin team, for Darley USA, for fans of Essential Quality. It was a special day. And this past Thursday, Godolphin was honored with a third Eclipse Award as leading owner of 2020. And that year did include the fact that they campaigned the undefeated juvenile champion Essential Quality. He was named two-year-old champion. And as an added bonus, VQuist, a daughter of Darley America stallion Nyquist, was named champion two-year-old filly. Joined now by Jimmy Bell, the president of Godolphin U.S. Jimmy, congratulations, my friend. What a year.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I was just thinking, if you're going to add that extra hour on your show, let's replay that stretch call again.
Yeah, we'll make it the essential quality. You know, he's going to come back, what, February 15th in the Southwest? Is that when he's looking to make his three-year-old debut?
It is. You know, I think Brad just sort of was primarily wanting to make sure that the distance wasn't too much the first time. Obviously, he's been down at the fairgrounds, and the mile of the 16th just seemed to be a little more what he felt was the right proper first step for the new year.
Let me ask you this question, Jimmy, since you brought up the fact that I should just play that race call for the entire third hour of the program. Is it okay with you if on this day I mix in a Holy Bull stretch call or two?
Wow, you know, that's funny. I don't know where this, some throwback Wednesday or something or other, and I got to see about three or four of those races, and I'll tell you, it absolutely still gives me goosebumps. You know, the Travers and a few of those great races he ran, it's just, it really, really was still pretty high in the great times in the game with being around old Holy Bull. I know he's a favorite of yours as well, but I think he was the people's favorites too. He was just so fun, so charismatic. What a great, great, great racehorse.
Yeah, I mentioned at the top of the show that as part of this new three-hour format, it's going to allow me to incorporate several new segments on a weekly basis. And one of those debuts around 9:20 Eastern this morning. It is Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. And today, his subject of the piece is Holy Bull, and he looks back on his career, and he did a fantastic job with it, so I'm really excited to bring that to our listeners at 9:20. Of course, the Holy Bull Stakes at Gulfstream today is a day to celebrate the bull, and you're right, some of those performances, you know, look, I mean, other horses like Cigar, for example, who came along and had the big winning streak, they'll be recognized as one of the greatest horses of that generation, but Holy Bull, in my opinion, doesn't take a back seat to many.
You're right about that. But anyway, that's you've got another listener for the 920 segment.
All right, perfect. Well, let's talk about what happened on Thursday night, that honor being bestowed upon Godolphin for the third time, the Eclipse Award for leading owner in 2020. It was a year in which Godolphin enjoyed three Grade 1 victories, several other greatest stakes performers. Jimmy, when you think back on last year, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind?
Well, it was, you know, listen, it's the game is filled with a lot of ups and downs, and to be able to see Maxfield come back was really special, and to see him back again now, you know, that boded well for a four-year-old season. Old Mystic guy jumped up and won, you know, had a lot of hope for him and got his day in the sun. The Jim Dandy ran a great race in the Jockey Club. And, of course, obviously Essential Quality had everybody attention. When I look back on it, I feel like his maiden race might have been as exciting, as impressive as anything. I know it got a little – the G1s came along, but it was a phenomenal effort to show what – you know, just what a talented colt he was. I remember Brad just saying that, gee whiz, you know, it was like September 5th when he started, and he said, you know, we got to get this colt going. He's just so full of himself and a baby Huey, but, you know, he's going to be really, really difficult to beat when they go two turns, but we got to get going. And he got in all kinds of trouble that day and this, that, and the other. They ran very, very fast, you know, and ended up, I think, going three quarters and nine and change. And here he is winning the sprint race when Brad was really just trying to get him going and hoping to look for a two-turn race. So, you know, that was a that kind of got everybody excited. And, you know, it was nice to see Fair Maiden jump up and win the La Brea. She'd been a little unlucky in two or three races. Nobody ever wants to hear about the couldas and shouldas and got shut off here or had this bad racing luck. But, you know, it was fun to see her get her day in the sun, and with Owen Hardy, too. That was it's just nice that we've got a great group of performers with some great trainers and you know, we're able to have some success here, there, and yonder.
You know, Brad Cox was on the show with me a few weeks back, and he told me he has three items on his racing bucket list that he wanted to accomplish. Number one was to win a Kentucky Derby. Number two, to win an Eclipse Award for leading trainer, which he has now done by virtue of that title coming his way on Thursday. And then the third one is to eventually find himself in the Hall of Fame. He's on that path now, and how great was it to see him honored with the Eclipse Award after that year that he had?
Well, it was phenomenal. I mean, if you just take a snapshot of one day, you just go to the Breeders' Cup, and yep. It was just, you know, it's so hard. You know, we all tend to forget, but, you know, it's a tribute to his management skills and his team that he's got around him, and he was first to point that out. But, you know, one thing I'll say, we've not been, you know, Brad's been sort of a recent addition, and I would say this guy's got phenomenal focus, almost photographic memory, attention to detail, very upbeat, very positive, and obviously it's, you know, he lives, eats, and breathes these horses, and it was on full display at the Breeders' Cup.
How great, Jimmy, would it be if he were to check off that second box and win the Kentucky Derby with a horse that races in those Godolphin colors?
Well, I think there'll be a few others excited to check that box too. That's a dream shared by many.
It certainly is. Talking with Jimmy Bell, the president of Godolphin's U.S. operations, the leading owners of 2020, third time that they have received that honor. Jimmy, one thing you mentioned when you accepted the award virtually, of course, with the virtual program, you said Godolphin's racing program both benefits and supports our breeding program. And you went on to say yes. That all 19 of your stakes performers that raced in 2020 were homebreds. That is very, very special.
Well, if you're asking me what, you know, to your previous question, that probably would have been it as well. I think it's such a testament to Sheikh Mohammed, to his commitment to racing in America, to the building up of this broodmare band that he's put together, and a very, very dynamic stallion roster. I mean, this is, you know, his breeding top and bottom, and I think to see the homebred program, I think that's everybody's. You just share the excitement together when it's spread around so many people that had so much to do with this. We all know this from the inside, you know, from the guys that sit down here and suggest the mating plans to really getting these mares in foal to the foaling barn, getting them raised up, getting them off the farm. And again, a lot of carrying hands go through this. And I think that's probably, as good a feeling as anything, knowing it's such a big team effort with so many people contributing in so many different ways.
You caught me off guard with your next statement when you said that this year will mark the beginning of the fifth decade that Sheikh Mohammed has been racing in the United States. That one took me back. I didn't think it had been 5 decades. That's incredible.
Yeah, he's just starting his fifth. He's been through 40-something years, just starting into his fifth decade. He's a testament of time. He doesn't seem to age. It's just, you know, everybody just thinks the same Sheikh Mohammed, you know, that same figure, same enthusiasm. And he's, you know, what a patron of the turf. I don't think you can say enough positive to what he does both on and off the track, for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. How would you, Jimmy, sum up Sheikh Mohammed's approach and his philosophy to the sport of thoroughbred racing, both breeding and racing?
Well, that's a great question, because it's something I admire about him is his philosophy. He, as you know, is a poet, is a philosopher, is many, many things. And obviously that would say he gives a lot of thought to things. And I think he's got just a wonderful attitude. I think he doesn't try to push the issue, doesn't try to put too much on anything. A little bit more of what will be. And he's happy to accept the goodness and the unfortunateness that come from those things. And, you know, certainly know he's experienced every high and every low. So, you know, he is a consummate horseman in his own right and a very philosophical. And I think that's what makes everybody in the organization not only try but respect so much, is that he understands and he appreciates. And, you know, he's been there. So it's not something that didn't work that all of a sudden everybody hangs their head. He really encourages and picks everybody up and keeps that good attitude. So I think his philosophy helps everybody just relax and do their part and understand that some days it works better than other days. But that would be one of his, I think, great characteristics, is just his overall philosophy. And that's, you know, with horses and life in general. He's very, very philosophical.
You know, I mentioned in the beginning of our interview, as I was introducing you, Jimmy, I can actually say that, that VQuist, a daughter of Darley American Stallion Nyquist, was named the champion 2-year-old filly, and rightfully so. What a year she had. How special was that to have a daughter of Nyquist be named a champion?
Well, it's just, you know, that's the top prize. You know, I think when all these young great racehorses retire to the breeding shed, you know, that race record of theirs lasts only so long, and then very quickly it goes to what kind of babies are you producing, and then very quickly it goes to what are your results. And when you are able to secure a champion in your first crop, you know, I think that's the ultimate goal for everybody, and we're very, very, very grateful for having Nyquist on board. And both he and Frosted are, you know, great, great young additions to the roster, and both have hit the mark and found their success. So, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to performance on the track for your offspring. And to be the leading freshman sire and to have a champion eclipse 2-year-old filly in your first crop sends you a long ways down the road, and, you know, continues to give breeders great confidence in Nyquist. And, you know, he certainly was not a one-horse wonder. So he's had a, you know, that's probably the best news, is such a broad base of very, very high-level performers.
Let's look ahead to 2021. What do you do for an encore, Jimmy?
Just try to stay in the buggy, you know, just be appreciative and be grateful for the good things that have come our way. And it's recognizing the enormity of such a team effort, both on the track and at the farms, and the involvement of so many people to make these things happen. It's a lot of working hands behind the scenes trying to do the best we can to put forward some competitive racehorses. And quite frankly, we're, you know, as we all know, things change very abruptly in this game. But at the same time, this is a pretty strong group for Godolphin going into a racing season with, you know, a couple of very nice older horses, obviously some very exciting 3-year-olds, and we can still hope there's another 2-year-old in the batch coming along. But, you know, with Mystic Guide and Maxfield, we're very excited to see them back in action. And then, you know, we've got obviously Essential Quality, but, you know, as you know, Prevalence with a wild performance down at Gulfstream, and a very, very gutsy little horse proxy that's with Mike Stidham that's done nothing wrong and continues to climb the ladder. So an awful lot to be excited about, an awful lot to be grateful for.
Yeah, this game can be like a roller coaster at times. You experienced that with Maxfield last year with some of the things that he went through, even going back to the year before with some of his injuries. He's overcome all of that. To see him back on top of his game is certainly pretty awesome. And then you flip the script around and you go through an undefeated campaign, almost no straw in his path with essential quality, and let's hope that continues here in 2021 as he gets ready to debut in the Southwest at Oaklawn on February 15th. But, Jimmy, it was quite a year, and I know 2021 is in great hands with yourself and with Darley Dan and with Sheikh Mohammed, the entire team with Godolphin and Darley. Very special, and all the best, my friend. Keep it rolling.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. You do a great job, and we're always honored to be a part of your program.
Jimmy, appreciate it. Jimmy Bell, Godolphin U.S. president here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, I mean, what a year. And you think about what they went through with Maxfield. It wasn't easy with Maxfield with all of those injuries. They'd get him close. They'd point him toward the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, remember? And then he got hurt before that race. Then he was pointing for the Kentucky Derby. Then he was off the Derby trail. Then, oh, it looked like maybe he'll get back on the Derby trail. And then, no, not quite. I mean, Brendan Walsh, what a job he has done with Maxfield and getting him back to top form after everything he had to overcome. And then here comes essential quality. Undefeated. Click, click, click. Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Championship. Highest highs and lowest lows. This game will test you. But nobody has stood the test of time as well as Sheikh Mohammed. 5 decades. Really? Yeah, that still blows my mind. I didn't realize it had been that long, but kudos to everybody with Godolphin and with Darley, and my thanks to Jimmy Bell. That interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. So I mentioned the show is presented by Healthnetics, and it has been for the entire month of January. And I have had many of you reach out and ask me about Healthnetics. Well, what is it? Well, it's a premium brand CBD company. And what does that mean? Well, their products are all natural, they're THC-free, and they're made right here in the USA. That term, CBD, has kind of become commonplace in our culture now. And their products are focused on quality and purity. And I've been telling you now all month that all of their products undergo rigorous lab testing with those results posted directly on the packaging. So you can see them right there. And if you have any aches and pains, maybe some sleep issues, anxiety, stress, whatever it might be that you're going through, give Healthnetics a try. And for a limited time, you can order from Healthnetics using promo code HRRN, and you're going to get 15% off your entire order plus free shipping. Yeah, just use promo code HRRN by going to healthnetics.com. That's healthnetics.com. Get 15% off and free shipping. Plus, hey, by the way, they have a 100% money-back guarantee, so you really have nothing to lose. Go to healthnetics.com, use promo code HRRN today. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time for today's First Bet, presented by First Bet, and a visit with jockey Corey Lannery, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
On an absolutely picture-perfect day for Thoroughbred Racing at Saratoga, the Dowager Empress of American Racing, 7 horses were to go postward for the 1941 Hopeful Stakes. This race, the 4th on the day's card, was for 2-year-olds, ipso facto, the moniker. It had originally drawn 238 nominees, but that number was cut down to 133 eligibles prior to the race. The reason that a short field of 7 went postward was that 3 of the 7 raced as a single betting interest for trainer John Gaver. The Manhasset stable had Amphitheater, the Sir Galahad III colt who had won the Saratoga Special in commanding style. The Green Tree colors were sported by Shutout, the Equipoise colt who had run second in the Special and won the Grand Union Hotel Stakes, and Devil Diver is the other half of their entry. Devil Diver was a St. Germans colt who had run second to Shutout in both the Grand Union and the Sanford. Mrs. Payne Whitney owned Green Tree and her daughter Mrs. C.S. Payson owned Manhasset stable. As an aside, a horse named Buster was in the field, and he was owned by Mrs. Payne Whitney's son, John Hay Whitney. They had, in those days, come to be known as, quote-unquote, the royal family of the American turf. To most observers, the three-horse entry of Devil Diver, Shutout, and Amphitheater looked to be unbeatable. All three had been racing against better company than there was in this field and had scored impressive wins. Shortly after the start, Devil Diver glided to the lead and his stablemate Shutout was right there, prompting to pace under the venerable heady Eddie Arcaro. Those two were on the lead, on to and around the far turn, with the rest of the small field well bunched and not far back. Around that far turn, there was considerable jockeying for position, which resulted in some bumping. The primary offender was Shutout under Arcaro. Arcaro jostled a challenging Ramillies a good bit amongst others. Devil Diver clung to the lead down the lane, even though tiring a bit in the final furlong, and won it by an open length. Shutout was second by a length, Amphitheater third. So, the three-horse entry nailed down the top three spots. In fact, Buster finished fourth so that the entire amount of the stakes went to the Whitney family. The rest of the story, and the result of a very roughly run race, was that an Ask No Quarter and Give None Eddie Arcaro, who had just resumed riding the previous week after a 30-day suspension for rough riding in Empire City, was once again suspended for his cowboy tactics, so to speak, in this running of the hopeful, pending a hearing, of course. At that hearing, the stewards of the Jockey Club suspended him for the rest of the year. Many thought the suspension should have been for life, since the foul in the hopeful was so blatantly flagrant. You'd think the young, aggressive, and precocious Arcaro would have learned his lesson from that, but not Eddie. Early the next year, in the Cowden Stakes, Arcaro and his mount got bumped just after the start while he was aboard Occupation. The offending rider was Vince Nodars aboard Breezing Home. Arcaro and Occupation eventually caught up to Breezing Home and Nodars in the late stages of that race. Arcaro then brought his mount up outside of Nodars and Breezing Home and literally tried to put Nodars over the inside rail. The stewards called Eddie in after the race and asked him just exactly what he was trying to do. Said Eddie, "I was trying to kill that Cuban." For that, Eddie got suspended for 1 year. The hopeful of 1941 in August and the victory of Devil Diver and Arcaro's rough ride in it, plus the aftermath in Eddie Arcaro's career, a truly memorable, if not great moment, as part of one of the legends of thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at Lexus of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes every fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery was a multiple graded stakes winner at two, including this victory in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity. At three, he sizzled in the San Felipe Stakes. Now his progeny are bringing top dollar in the sales ring.
$450,000.
Internet buys, $510,000, thank you.
An exciting young stallion, Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Racing fans, although there is still no public admittance, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. And with the resumption of racing at Golden Gate Fields, the $5 Golden Hour Double and the $1 Golden Hour Pick 4 are now once again available. This Saturday, three-year-olds will go postward in an important prep to the Santa Anita Derby, the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis Stakes at a Milam 116. The Lewis winner will receive 10 Kentucky Derby qualifying points. Also on Saturday, older horses go a Milam 1/8 and the Grade 2 San Pasquale, an iconic stepping stone to the Santa Anita Handicap. Be sure to tune in early on both Saturday and Sunday as track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley will handicap each day's card beginning at 11:20 a.m. at santaanita.com/live. First post time this weekend is at 12:30.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
At the quarter pole, the ride of a lifetime, turning for home in front. Midnight Bourbon to the attack. Notary gives way. Down the set of the track, Sitting on Go continues to close. There's one furlong left. Midnight Bourbon comes away with the lead. Sitting on Go continues to close. Here comes Sitting on Go, who's up for the lead at the 16th pole. Sitting on Go up over Midnight Bourbon and Superstock. Sitting on Go, 24-1. Over Midnight Bourbon, Superstock, and the ride of a lifetime.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Healthnetics CBD on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. That was Travis Stone with the call of the Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill Downs on September 5th of last year. A win by Sitting on Go for trainer Dell Romans under jockey Corey Lannery, who will be back aboard Sitting on Go for his three-year-old debut later this afternoon in the Holy Bull Stakes at Gulfstream. Going to be joined by Corey coming up in just a minute. But first, it is time now for another new weekly segment. We brought it to you the past few weeks, actually, here on the Equine Forum. It is brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes from race 7 at Gulfstream Park, which is a maiden special weight race on the turf and should go right around 2:44 Eastern. Number 2, Action Jackson, 9-2 on the morning line, has a 30% first bet win projection, rates 16 points higher than the next closest win contender, and is a top 2 ranked contender in 5 of the 10 most important first bet factors in this race. Trainer Safi Joseph Jr. changes jockeys to the meet's leading rider, Irad Ortiz Jr., and Action Jackson is well drawn in post 2 in a capacity field on turf. Consider using him in exactas with key first-time starters as they appear on the tote. Today's first bet is number 2, Action Jackson, in race 7 at Gulfstream Park. I'll be back right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
See, now that First Bet segment you just heard is one of the reasons why I never made it as a track announcer. Grew up wanting to be a track announcer, idolizing Tom Durkin. I wanted to be the next Tom Durkin. But you hear a name like Action Jackson, right? And you see how slow I had to go to pronounce it now. It took me like 3 takes to get that right in the piece you just heard. That is why I couldn't do it live. You put 10, 12 horses in the gate, you got Action Jackson going to the front, and then all these other horses mixing it up with other names, forget it. That was one of the reasons. The other reason was I just couldn't remember the horses' names, and if you're going to be a track announcer, that's kind of important. One name I could remember is Sitting on Go, the winner of the Iroquois at Churchill last year. He's back with his 3-year-old debut in the Holy Bull Stakes this afternoon and reunited with his good friend, jockey Corey Lannery, who, let me tell you, one of the more underrated riders in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Corey has ridden, well, he's closing in on 5,000 wins. His total today, 4,781 wins. He has mounts in 4 of the 5 greatest stakes coming up at Gulfstream today. And Corey is nice enough to spend a few minutes with me this morning. Appreciate it, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Everything's going well.
Yeah, it is going well for you. You've been on a roll, and you have been for a long time, but you come back with mounts in 4 of the greatest stakes. 3 of those are for trainer Dale Romans. How cool is it, Corey, to be in a barn like Dale, as they say, you know, into the barn as a rider and riding for a guy like Dale Romans, who you know is going to put you on live horses?
Yeah, he's always good, you know, and you go in confident, you know, because Dale wins a lot of races, and he shows up in the big races also, you know, and so you always go in there thinking you have a chance, and he's got a lot of good horses back there.
Let's talk about the big horse, Sittin' on Go, and we'll walk back through the other stakes races too, but I want to start with Sittin' on Go, and then we'll kind of go backwards. But this is a horse that now makes his three-year-old debut. You won with him in the Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill last year. Look back on that performance. What do you remember about that race?
That race was outstanding. You know, he broke. He was ran kind of mid-pack, a little towards the back, and when I got him outside and got him clear, he finished really, really fast and really good. And it was very impressive. You know, and then after that, he's come back and he ran a bad race, and then he came back and he ran a okay race. And hopefully Dale's figured something out with him and got him back to where he was for the Iroquois, because I think he's a really nice horse.
You mentioned the way he finished in the Iroquois, and he did. He came from almost last. He was 9 of 10 early and then just stormed home and drew off and won by 2.5 lengths. How rare is it, Corey, to have a young horse, a 2-year-old, and have them be able to sit and relax like that? It seems to me like most of these young horses just want to run off on the front end.
Yeah, well, you know, some of them just aren't fast enough to get to the front end. So, you know, I think that day he was just kind of outfooted, and but he just ran his race. You know, he sat confident back there, and like I said, once I got him out, he just came home fast. But he's a horse. He doesn't have a whole lot of speed, so he's going to be towards the back.
You know, I'm always amazed when I see jockeys on these horses that are closers and come from off the pace, and they time their moves perfectly. It's almost, you know, they talk about having a clock in your head. How do you do that, Corey? What's the key to making your move at the right time with a horse like Sittin' on Go who comes from off the pace?
It's hard to explain. I don't think there is a, it's just, you just do it. You just go out there and you react and you kind of ride, I guess, kind of like if you were racing another human. You know, if you're far back, you're going to kind of start to move up if you can catch them and try to catch them right on the wire. But it's hard to put a finger on exactly what it is that makes it happen.
I know you'll spend a lot of time looking through the past performances and watching replays before you go into, well, any race really, but certainly a big race like the Holy Bull later today. What exactly is your preparation coming up to a race like this, Corey?
Look at the racing form, you know, and kind of see where the pace is going to be, see how where I'm going to be laying at. Now we watch the replays. You watch replays of my horse and the other horses, you know, and just kind of learn what they do in a race, where they're going to be, and kind of draw up a plan in your mind, you know. And but then we all know once the gates open, anything can happen, and all that can go right out the window.
You're very familiar with another horse in the Holy Bull, and that's number 2, Willie Boy, who you rode in each of his first 2 starts, both of those being wins at Gulfstream Park. You end up going with Sittin' on Go, your greatest stakes winner, but tell me a little bit more about Willie Boy and what we might expect from him in this race.
Yeah, he's a nice horse, you know. He's done anything wrong. It was a tough decision to figure out who to ride, and because, you know, Willie Boy stepped up both times and run great races. He'll be stretching out a little further this time, you know, so the distance could be a question. And he's facing a little bit better horses. So, you know, he's got to step up and move forward. But like I said, he's done nothing wrong so far.
You know, Corey, there's so many people listening that will just pick up the racing form or the past performances, and they'll see your name on a different horse in this race, like it is going from Willie Boy to Sittin' on Go. And they don't understand what goes in to a decision when the jockey has to make that call. It's, as you said, it wasn't an easy decision. What are some of the factors that play into making a call like that?
Well, one of the big factors was one of my decisions to come back to Florida was Dale said I could come back here and ride all of his horses, you know?
Yeah.
So, kind of was my loyalty was there for that. And, you know, I want a graded race on Sittin' on Go. So it's hard to take a horse that hadn't faced that kind of company yet and over sitting on go. You know, he's got to prove himself and show that he belongs.
Talking with jockey Corey Lannery here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Corey, let's go backwards here, and we'll go to your first greatest stake mount today. It's also for Dale Romans. That is King's Ovation. Now, this is a horse that you'll be aboard for Dale for the very first time, another horse making his three-year-old debut. What do you know about him?
You know, I watched I actually didn't watch his replay now, but I listened to the racing for him, and he won at Churchill. He was another one kind of like sitting on goal, came from the back, and ran him down. I hadn't been on him. All I can do is watch his replays and read the racing form. But I actually saw him schooling in the paddock yesterday, and he looked really, really good. He looked ready. He looked like I was talking to Dale's assistant in Baltimore, and he said he's grown up and he's gotten really a lot bigger since then, and he's doing really good.
Yeah, that's in the Claiborne Farms Swale Stakes later today. That is race number 6. In race number 9, which is the Forward Gale, you come back and Dale will give you a leg up again, this time on a horse named Lady Traveler, this 3-year-old daughter of Quality Road, who you did ride once. You rode her last time in the Grade 2 Goldenrod. Tell me a little bit more about Lady Traveler.
Yeah, you know, that race in the Goldenrod was a disappointment because I know they were pretty high on her going into the race. And she, some reason or another, she didn't run her race. So, hopefully she's back to herself and has a good chance in there. But she was real promising. I think she won her first or second time out, and then after that went to the state. But she's really nice, and hopefully she's turned around and ready to run a big one today.
Yeah, well, she's 4-1 on the morning line, so she's certainly one of the contenders from that respect. And then the next race, the Grade 3 Swedish Chant, Queen of the Green, is the horse you're aboard for trainer John Arnett. What do you know about Queen of the Green?
Not too much, you know. I've read the form and just doing that, and I'm going to watch replays, but not much information on that one yet.
Yeah, he's Corey Lannery, and again, one of the more underrated riders in the sport. He'll be prepping for these races throughout the morning, and 4 of the 5 greatest stakes he'll be active in later today. Corey, listen, man, it's always a delight to catch up and appreciate you spending a little bit of time. All the best. Safe trip every time you get a leg up, and good luck later today.
All right, man. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks. Corey Lannery. Yeah, you know, that's the interesting thing. You know, you hear him talk about Queen of the Green, and very honest, what do you know about her? Well, not a whole lot yet. And that's one thing that's always intriguing to me, right? He's never been aboard Queen of the Green. And John Arnett is not Dale Romans in terms of the number of horses that and the number of mounts he's going to give to Corey Lannery. So he's going to have to do some homework here. And he's going to have to do as much as he can to learn about Queen of the Green, reading through the past performances, watching the replays. He'll do all that. And you heard him say he's just looked at the form. But I can tell you that in the jocks room, and in every jocks room across the country, but at Gulfstream for sure, there are replay machines. And when you go in there, and I've been in there countless times to interview so many of these riders, so many of the, they're just not sitting around playing pool or cards. A lot of them are spending time watching replays. And I've had so many times where I've had to wait for a jockey to come downstairs to meet me for an interview, and I'll spend 10, 15 minutes sitting in there at the counter where they'll do breakfast and lunch and all that kind of stuff for the riders. And I'll just watch the way that many of the riders prepare to go about their day. And you see that a lot. Those replay machines they get wore out. They really do. And that's one thing that Corey will be doing later today when he gets in there. He'll probably pull up some replays before he goes to the track, but I'm sure he'll be watching them when he gets there too. And, again, big day for Corey Lannery coming up. That interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. All right, in the next segment, our Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. Then I'll get you set for hour two of a 3-hour show here this morning. The first 3-hour equine forum in the history of the Horse Racing Radio Network. And this show, by the way, predates me. I started in 2003 when this show was 1 hour. We quickly took it to 2 hours after that. And now, 15 years later, expand it to 3 hours. And some new segments coming up. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. You'll hear it at 9:20. You're going to hear In the Room with Sean Clancy, champion jockey. That's a jockey-to-jockey one-on-one interview with Kendrick Carmouche. And it's a conversation you won't want to miss. That comes up at 10 o'clock Eastern time. And at 10:20, I'm going to open the phone lines, and you'll have an opportunity to participate in the show. It's a brand-new call-in segment. I'll have it every week on the program for you. You can weigh in on all things horse racing coming up 10:20 Eastern time this morning. When I come back, it's your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Sire of Sires, Taprit, to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill, but he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those?
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs a water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Brisnet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Brisnet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
Hyde is in third. Dom's Lady splitting runners. She's moving up in the four path as they round the far turn. It's still Tracy's Girl to catch. Tracy's Girl's in front. You're Killing Me, Beth, the first one to take a crack at her, but it's still wide open here. Hyde's in it with a chance. Then comes Dom's Lady in between runners. You're Killing Me, Beth's in front. You're Killing Me, Beth is going to give trainer David Walters his 1,500th win. A tribute to a fantastic horseman. You're Killing Me, Beth wins it by three. From Dom's Lady, then towards the outside was Hurricane Director in 54-3.
Paul Espinoza with the call of that maiden win for You're Killing Me, Beth at Charlestown, January 13th. It was the eighth race of the evening. You're Killing Me, Beth, trained by David Walters, who spent an hour with me this past week on our trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. And it was such a delight to hear his story. He's a great family man. His wife has been by his side for roughly three decades, maybe longer than that. And he finally gets that 1,500th milestone win back on January 13th. And I thought it was appropriate that I honor David again here this morning as your industry star of the week. This segment brought to you every Saturday by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He's all over the map. He was down in Ocala this week, one of the hardest-working guys in racing, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Melagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest level. So visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. Well, David Walters, started the conversation this morning by looking back on that milestone win with your Killing Me, Beth.
It was special. It was certainly special to share it with my family, who kept coming over and coming over for that one special win, and they finally put their time in and got it done.
How long were you sitting on 1499 before you finally reached it?
I believe it was a couple weeks, maybe mid-December. And at that point, when 1499 came about, I didn't know where I was at until Paul announced it when that particular horse won. I had no clue what number I was at because I gave it no thought. I didn't want to think about it. Because the more pressure you put on yourself, the longer it takes.
Did you feel more pressure knowing that you were just one win away when you found out?
After 1499, I did.
Yeah?
Sure did. Yeah.
How'd you deal with the pressure?
Oh, it really wasn't what you call pressure. It was just a matter of getting it over with and what horse you would do it with, whether it would be one of your big clients or one of your own that you bred. You know, it's certainly good whoever owned a horse, but it was just a question of which one it would be.
Well, this particular filly, You're Killing Me, Beth, which, as I mentioned, I love that name. That's just such a cool name when you think about it, because that expression, you know, oh, you're killing me. You're killing me, Beth. Her second career start, her first in 16 months, so maybe a more unlikely winner for you to reach 1500. Tell me her story.
Well, she was she ran once at Gulfstream and had some tendon issues after that race, and the owners decided to give her some proper amount of time, which turned into be over a year. And of course, it was a slow climb back for her. And at the race I pointed her to, it was only 4.5 furlongs, and I thought the filly was plenty fit enough, but was the race long enough? That was the only thing in doubt for me, which, as it turned out, she was forwardly placed and wasn't too far out of it, and when they turned for home, she was close enough to kick it in gear and get the job done.
When she finally crossed the finish line and she's in front, and you realize, okay, we did this. We just hit 1,500. The pressure's off. I'd imagine it was a big celebration. You mentioned your family, and we'll talk more about them. But how would you put into words what that moment was like, David?
It was a lot of things going around in my mind. The people that helped me get here, the good owners that I have, the employees that I have and have had in the past. They make it all possible, because you're only as good as the people around you and the people you train for. And through the years, I've had a lot of good clients, and to this day, I still do. I have people that I trained for since 1979, and they're the ones that pay you to train, and you know, they believe in what you tell them, and everything seems to work out when you have clients like that.
What else do you think you might be doing, David, if you weren't training horses right now? What would you be doing for a living?
Oh, gosh, that's hard to say. That's a great question. And unfortunately, I can't answer it. I really have no clue what I'd be doing in life if it wasn't for horses.
Now, like so many trainers who have had success in the sport, singularly focused is the key to everything they've accomplished. It is true for David Walters, our industry star of the week for this Saturday morning, presented by Stuart Morris. I'll be back with hour number two right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. Kentucky Derby and Breeders' Cup Classic winner Authentic added Horse of the Year and Champion 3-Year-Old honors at the Eclipse Awards this past Thursday. Monomoy Girl won her second Eclipse, trainer Brad Cox is first, and jockey Rod Ortiz Jr. made it 3 in a row. There are 2 Road to the Kentucky Derby points races today. At Gulfstream, trainer Todd Fletcher looks to tie Nick Zito and Kieran McLaughlin for most wins in the Holy Bull with one of his 2 entrants. At Santa Anita, trainers Bob Baffert and Doug O'Neill will each send out a pair of runners in the Robert Lewis. Post time at the Great Race Place has been changed to 12:30 Pacific for both Saturday and Sunday. And at Sam Houston on Sunday, trainer Mike Maker sends out 3 runners as he looks for his record 8th win in the John B. Connolly Turf Cup, while Lady Apple looks to win back-to-back runnings of the Houston Ladies Classic. Post time for the special Sunday card is 1:45 Central. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Rise and shine, HRN Nation, if you haven't already. Let's do this. Hour 2 of a 3-hour Equine Forum show this morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you back with me. And this really is a special show, ushering in an exciting new era with our flagship program. This show is known as the show that launched a network, and today we expand it with all new content. And this will happen each and every week now. You'll be able to join me from 8 to 11, and you'll be able to participate in the show with a special call-in segment. That segment today comes up right around 10:20 Eastern when I open up the phone lines and let you weigh in on all things racing. Let me know who you think will win the Holy Bull, if you got a pick in the Robert B. Lewis, or if you want to share your thoughts on our poll question today, which so many of you are already doing, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And the poll question is pretty simple. Which of today's 3-year-old stakes races is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner? And you have 4 choices: the Swale, the Holy Bull, the Kitten's Joy, or the Robert B. Lewis. And no surprise that the Holy Bull and the Kitten, or the Robert B. Lewis, the 2 points races, are far and away the leaders in the voting process. Right now, the Holy Bull, 47% of the vote. The Robert B. Lewis, 38%. That's a little surprising to me. And I'll talk more about this later when I visit with other special guests, including trainers Mike McCarthy and Doug O'Neill. I think the Robert B. Lewis is the stronger of the 2 prep races. But apparently HRN Nation doesn't. 47% saying the Kentucky Derby winner, if it comes from one of those 4 graded stakes today, it's coming from the Holy Bull. Interesting stuff. All right, again, you have new segments coming up, including Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, which debuts at 9:20 Eastern, and In the Room with Sean Clancy at 10 o'clock Eastern. That's a one-on-one, jockey-to-jockey conversation that you won't want to miss. He sits down virtually with Kendrick Carmouche, and some of the things coming out of that conversation are just spectacular. Sean, tremendous at drawing things out of riders. Since he's played the game, he's been there, he knows what riders are going through. Stay with me for that segment coming up at 10 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Big day down in Texas tomorrow. The Houston Racing Festival, which is a program that is near and dear to so many people's hearts, and I know it is for Chris Griffin, who is the track announcer there. It's a 10-race program with a special first post of 1:45 Central, 2:45 Eastern. 6 stakes races. 2 of those are grade 3s, the Houston Ladies Classic and the John B. Connolly Turf Cup. And again, that all happens tomorrow, and Chris Griffin is with me now from South Texas. Chris, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Good morning, Mike. It's great to be back with you. And yeah, we're ready to roll. It's going to be a fun afternoon tomorrow, and we're really looking forward to it.
No shortage of storylines. I talked about it at the top of the show. You had defending champion Lady Apple for Steve Asmussen, one of 2 horses he has entered into the Houston Ladies Classic, the John B. Connolly Turf Cup. Well, typically it's all about Mike Maker. Maybe again this year, too.
Yeah, he's got plenty of horses that he is bringing over for the big day here, the Houston Racing Festival. And when he's on the turf, the John B. Connolly turf, obviously you've got to take notice. And he's got three in there. UDIE also has entered in the Houston Ladies Classic. And, yeah, you talk about those two grade three events. It seems like he's got some real live shots. I actually like him in the Texas Turf Mile a little bit as well. So if you follow him and kind of wager on some of those horses, I think you could have a nice day if they get to the winner's circle. But there's a lot of great barns, a lot of nice horses, and we're looking forward to some great racing. I've been very spoiled in the last two renditions of the Houston Ladies Classic with Midnight Bisou, and then a great finish last year in Lady Apple, and the defending champ is back, but Latruska has come to play, Motion Emotion down towards the inside, and Ken McPeak's got one, and Mike Maker, as you mentioned, and then the local horse, and she's our fastest. So it's a real nice group. It's a real nice card, and we're looking forward to it.
For people that have never been to Sam Houston, Chris, tell me a little bit more about the racetrack. And I know that, you know, certainly fans, will there be fans, first of all, tomorrow?
Yes. So there will be limited attendance as far as fans. There's very strict protocols as far as your temperature taking when you do enter Sam Houston Race Park. You got to wear a mask, and I will remind people throughout the day to make sure that they do wear their masks. And we are doing the best we can here at SHRP, and there will be some fans in attendance, absolutely.
Well, that's good to hear. So for people who have never been to Sam Houston, how would you describe it to somebody who's asking you about it?
Yeah, so this is Houston, Texas, and it's they're very passionate. The horsemen are very passionate. The fans are very passionate. And the bettors are really into the product. And for us, that 12% takeout on horizontal wagers has been a great thing. But as far as the racetrack, it's it's a great facility. The track surfaces have been raved about by horsemen and by many people, and you hear about some of the connections that have come over to run on the John B. Connolly Turf Course. They have talked about the condition of the turf course and how horses like to run over it, how nice it is. And so I've heard that from multiple horsemen, that they've brought horses here because of what they've heard about the track surfaces, and they're looking forward to it. This region is continuing to grow, you know, with the raisin purses and the state of Texas really getting involved to push horse racing and start to put it on a national landscape. This just continues that. And for us to offer these good stakes races and the couple grade threes and the Houston Ladies Classic, who knows where that race could go. The Texas Turf Mile has been a very well-received event, going the two turns on the grass and for strictly for three-year-olds. And it's a really positive atmosphere, and things are going well, and we are growing in this region. And you could tell that a lot of folks are really excited about it here in the Houston area. But this is the 27th year that Sam Houston's been around, and it's great. Everything is good, and I'm lucky to be in the booth and be able to call some races. It'll be fun.
I'm glad you brought up the Texas Turf Mile, because in addition to the two grade threes, there are four other stakes races: the Texas Turf Mile, the Pulse Power Turf Sprint, you have the Jersey Lily Turf, and then the Stoner Side Sprint. So what other storylines, and we'll talk more about the two grade threes in a minute, but what other storylines are you going to be keeping an eye on throughout the day, Chris?
Yeah, storyline-wise, I mean, I think that the Stoner Side Sprint looks a little bit more wide open than folks might think. I mean, I think it's interesting to see some of these connections say that they're going to take a shot. You know, Nitrous has been running against some very tough horses, but he does draw the rail, and I think that some folks have had a question mark whether the 8-5 is going to be a little too short on the morning line there to take that proposition for a 6-furlong race, a $75,000 stakes race. I think the 5-furlongs, the Pulse Power Sprint on the turf, is another one that looks like a tough race. Steve Asmussen is well known in this region, and he could also win quite a few races, multiple stakes races on the program. And he, morning line wise, he has the potential to do just that. The Texas Turf Mile is a race that you just see now as we've brought it now in its second year, and it's just been so well received to have a restricted 3-year-old race on the turf. I think the biggest storyline out of there is that who knows where this turf horse can go. You know, we're seeing some real rising stars in this race in a big full field, and we've got a couple also eligible. So if there are any scratches, then they'll get in. I think that's a real testament to what we've done here and management and everybody. And I think a lot of people are looking forward to that Texas Turf Mile. I think that that one has a lot of excitement. You're seeing Todd Pletcher's got a couple entered in there, and you see Mike Maker, and you see Peter Erden, you know, one from the West Coast, and we'll see. And then Texas Bad Boy is, again, a local horse that Kevin Scholl is 2-for-2, and the horse is going to be 15-to-1 again, going to be double-digit odds, and he likes the horse. And if that horse can get up, I think that would be a very special win because he's stabled right here, Texas Bad Boy. So lots of nice storylines, and there's some great ones in the grade threes as well because we've got some nice stories there with the big favorite.
Texas Bad Boy could prove the hometown hero in that Texas Turf Mile. $200,000 purse. It's race 7 post time, 6 o'clock Eastern. That is 5 o'clock local time, central time, at Sam Houston for the Houston Racing Festival, which comes your way tomorrow. Visiting with Chris Griffin, who is the announcer at Sam Houston. You heard him talk about the names that he's had the privilege to call the past couple of years, like Midnight Bisou, the champion who made her stop there in the Houston Ladies Classic. And then you had Lady Apple last year. She's back to defend her title here in 2021, but she faces a tough task. You know, you look at that field, the Houston Ladies Classic, grade 3, purse of $300,000. It's a mile and the 16th on the main track. Lady Apple is 4-to-1, but the favorite's role is going to go to the horse on the outside, number 7, Latruska. You said earlier she comes to play. She usually does, Chris.
Yeah, she really does. And I've said a couple times that there's no gray area here. People are completely all in on Latruska, or they are playing against in the spot. She likes the distance. She's been 2-for-2 at the distance. She is here, and trainer Fausto Gutierrez has been schooling her, and she's been, you know, going on some morning gallops and whatnot. And she looks the part. You know, I think she's got speed. She's got an outside post. I think that's going to help her a lot. I guess from a handicapping standpoint, it just depends on if anyone goes with her. You know, Motion to Motion looks to have some speed at the rail and does draw the rail. So I think one that could challenge for the early lead. But if Latruska gets out there by herself, she could be tough. And it's you're seeing Jesus Castan on a board. You know, I was looking through it. I was taking a look at quite a few of the runners in this race. And I don't believe, as I look through some of these running lines, that the riders are all first time on the horse, and every horse in the race. You know, it looks like each horse gets a new rider. So I felt like that was kind of an interesting angle to take a look at as well, is that these riders are going to get accustomed to these really nice fillies and mares for the first time in this grade three.
Yeah, and you mentioned Motion to Motion, too, who breaks from the inside post, and these are the connections that brought us Horse of the Year Authentic with MyRacehorse.com and Spendthrift Farm. This is a 5-year-old daughter of Take Charge Indy. And she has a little bit of early zip. Don't know if she's quick enough to go with Latruska. She may find herself in the stalking position, which from the rail could bode pretty well for her, right?
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be an early decision made. That first turn, yeah. You know, when they head to that first turn, you're going to see pretty quickly, I think, how this race shape is going to go. If Motion to Motion can hold position, and I'm not sure she can against Latruska into that first turn, then that opens it up. I think it makes it wide open because, you know, everyone else doesn't seem to be able to run with Latruska early. She's our fastest, has shown a little bit of early zip, and even Figure It Out has shown a little bit of speed, but can they really, I'm not sure if they can quite get up there with Latruska. Motion to Motion, I think, can early on. And, you know, if we go really quick up front, and they went pretty quick last year, it does set up for Lady Apple. I mean, her form might not be quite the same as it was last year coming into the race, but she's had that comeback race. She finished behind Will Nelly at Fairgrounds, and she likes the distance, 5 of 9, and she likes the racetrack. And you're going to get 4-to-1 on Steve Atlas and Stuart Elliott. So leading rider, leading trainer at the meet so far. So it's an interesting little handicapping kind of puzzle to put together, because I think that you can really make the case. You say if Latruska gets the breather down the backside, she's probably gone. But if she's got pressure, could open it up for somebody at a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, the Ladies Classic is race 8. The race following it is the other grade 3, the John B. Connolly Turf Cup, and another big field set to go. We mentioned the success that Mike Maker has had in this race over the years. He's won 7 of the past 9. He has 3 chances to make it 8 of the last 10. None of his 3 horses, though, are favored in this race. That honor goes to Spooky Channel under Julian Leperu, who is the 5-to-2 morning line favorite.
Yeah, I mean, and look at his last running line there in that grade 2, the Fort Lauderdale. He finished behind Largent. I think that jumps off the page. I think people are going to take notice of that, that the horse is running the grade one, two starts back at Belmont in the Manhattan, and then ran pretty decent there in the grade two. The horse is one at the distance, deserves to be the favorite, I think, in this spot, has been keeping some very tough company and ships in. And obviously, Brian Lynch has this one ready to roll. It's going the mile and a half. You take a look at Mike Maker's runners. Yeah, you can't ignore them in this spot. You got to either play all three on a ticket, or you got to choose which one you really want to side with. I know some folks have talked about they like the Journey to Freedom quite a bit, coming off the break since November 27th. Conviction Trade was an interesting one, is cutting back in distance actually from 2 miles. And I don't know where Marzo is going to be spotted. That's kind of an interesting one for me, because the horse has been running long and distance, had shown speed there at Saratoga, but Tut's Revenge looks to be alone on the front end. I don't quite see who's going to run with the 7 early. And that's another one, you know, Clinton Stewart stabled here. A lot of people are kind of talking about this horse, that he likes to be on the front end. He gets pretty brave out there. This is a test for him in this grade three, but he hasn't done anything wrong. I mean, he's been very, very impressive when he gets to the front, and he just keeps going. 6 out of 12 in 2020, and just been really, really game and impressive. So it looks like it's pretty wide open, but then again, Mike Maker's won 7 of these. So, you know, it's hard to just say, I'm going to throw out some of his runners in here, because they all probably have a very, very big shot.
Yeah, it's a huge day. Tomorrow at Sam Houston, the Houston Racing Festival, 10 races, 6 stakes races, the 2 grade threes, and of course that low takeout of 12% on the horizontal wagers. Let's not gloss over that, Chris, because that is something that Sam Houston has done a fantastic job with those low takeout wagers. So keep up the wonderful work. Really appreciate the visit here this morning, and can't wait to hear you tomorrow at Sam Houston.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Mike, and enjoy the day.
All right. That interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Those races have had some really good horses over the past several years, and this year no exception. And looking forward to the Houston Racing Festival tomorrow at Sam Houston. Going to get to another break. I'll come back with a brand new segment you won't want to miss. It is Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Healthnetics CBD. For amazing relief of everyday aches and pains, try Healthnetics premium brand CBD.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top 5 general sire by the number of 2-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
The championship meet is on at Gulfstream Park. World-class racing Wednesday through Sunday. Thoroughbred stakes action continues with the Grade 2 Phasic Tipton Fountain of Youth and Grade 1 Florida Derby. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with the First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. First Bet offers predicted picks, high-definition live stream races, replays, and live betting from the palm of your hand. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
And Holy Bull comes roaring off the turn, bracing for a challenge here from Cherokee Run. Cherokee Run confronts Holy Bull, and Holy Bull is digging down and is responding, and he shrugs off the challenge of Cherokee Run. Virginia Rapids is running in third. Devil is Due is fourth, but it's Holy Bull, hand ridden by Mike Smith, and he'll go on to a magnificent Met Mile. Holy Bull by five.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Healthnetic CBD. That one of the signature victories in the career of the great Holy Bull. The Met Mile, Tom Durkin with the call. Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron in the Backstretch with you on this Saturday morning. It's no secret for those of you who listen to the show every week that Holy Bull is my all-time favorite horse, and that was one of my all-time favorite Holy Bull moments. We're going to look back on his career in just a minute, but I do want to remind you that if you haven't already done so, you'll want to head over to healthnetics.com, and for a limited time, use promo code HRRN, and you're going to get 15% off plus free shipping. And Healthnetics is a company that was founded by Jack Murray. Jack is a, you've heard him on the show with me before, about 3 weeks ago. You can go back and listen to the website, to the interview on our website. But Jack is a longtime horse racing fan. He is a horse owner, and he founded Healthnetics, which is a premium brand CBD company, and their products, they wanted to do it differently and set themselves apart. Their products are all natural, they're THC-free, and they're made right here in the USA. They are focused on quality and purity, and all of their products undergo rigorous lab testing, and those results are posted right on the packaging. So if you have some aches and pains, some sleep issues, anxiety, stress, whatever it may be, give Healthnetics a try, and you really have nothing to lose because they have a 100% money-back guarantee. So go there now, healthnetics.com, and for a limited time, using promo code HRRN, you will get 15% off plus free shipping. It's all there at healthnetics.com. Well, I'm excited for this next segment. It is a brand-new segment that you will hear every single week here on the Equine Forum as part of our expanded three-hour format. And each week, we get to take a stroll through racing history with Keeneland announcer and our HRRN colleague, Kurt Becker.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take a stroll through racing history. Imagine naming a stakes race for a horse whose three-year-old season included a 25-length loss in the Fountain of Youth and an 18-length loss in the Kentucky Derby. He never raced in the Preakness, the Belmont, or the Breeders' Cup Classic, yet he was named champion three-year-old male and Horse of the Year in 1994. It might make more sense if we tell you that the horse was Holy Bull.
Holy Bull has led every step of the way and has a commanding 4.5-5-length lead. The battle will be for second.
Holy Bull winning like a champion with devastating ease. Holy Bull tied with the best horses in training.
Owner and trainer Warren Arthur Kroll Jr., better known as Jimmy, described Holy Bull as, quote, big, strong, well-balanced, and athletic, end quote. The horse stood better than 16 hands, had a girth of 72 inches, and weighed nearly 1,200 pounds. But early in his three-year-old campaign, Holy Bull suffered a 25-length defeat in the Fountain of Youth Stakes at Gulfstream Park, a race in which he had suffered a loss of oxygen to his lungs because of the throat impairment known as a flipped palate. So, Kroll changed the bit, and Holy Bull responded by winning the Florida Derby and then shipping to Keeneland to win the Bluegrass Stakes. But on the first Saturday in May, as the 2-1 favorite in the 120th running of the Kentucky Derby, Holy Bull finished 12th to 14 horses, beaten some 18 lengths by Gopher Jen. The bull had been slow from the gate that day and squeezed back entering the first turn on a sloppy track. But his trainer never fully accepted those factors as reasons for the defeat. Kroll, who died in 2008, once said, quote, Holy Bull had no pep or vigor in the mornings that week. He was fine in the stall, but he was not himself on the track. I never really have figured out exactly what happened, end quote. Kroll decided to give his horse a rest, skipping the final two legs of the Triple Crown to focus on the summer campaign. Holy Bull responded well to the game plan, winning five consecutive graded stakes, four Grade Ones, culminating with a triumph over older horses in the Woodward at Belmont Park. He also counted the Metropolitan, the Dwyer, the Haskell, and a memorable hard-fought win in the Travers Stakes among his credits. All that was left was the Breeders' Cup Classic, but Holy Bull had been in continuous training for 18 months. He had already made 10 starts on the year, and he was not nominated to the Breeders' Cup, which meant a $360,000 supplemental payment was on the horizon. Kroll assessed the situation and decided the horse had earned a rest. Holy Bull would not participate in the Breeders' Cup and instead would take a well-earned break to prepare for his four-year-old campaign. The conventional wisdom was that Holy Bull had already done enough to earn Eclipse honors as champion three-year-old male and horse of the year. The following January, those honors were made official at the Eclipse ceremony. Holy Bull became the fifth Florida bred ever to be named horse of the year, joining a list which included such greats as Dr. Fager and Affirmed. Following a 138-day layoff, Holy Bull returned to the races with a victory in the Olympic Handicap at Gulfstream Park in January of 1995. But on February 11, he injured a ligament in the Don Handicap and was retired to stallion duty soon thereafter. 4 weeks later, on March 11, 1995, Gulfstream Park unveiled its first edition of the Holy Bull Stakes, to pay tribute to a horse who had finished his career with 13 wins from 16 starts and nearly $2.5 million in earnings. Holy Bull was a horse who captured the imagination of the public. He was held in such high regard that someone once remarked that his rare losses were the equivalent of Michelangelo smudging the canvas. Following a successful stallion career in Kentucky, he died in 2017. But the legacy of Holy Bull lives on, in part through the race at Gulfstream Park, which is named in his honor. Please join me again next week as I stroll through racing history with the inspirational story of another horse to whom we should all be paying a debt of gratitude.
And my thanks to Kurt Becker for that stroll through racing history. Again, a segment you will hear every week here on the program as we look back on a horse, on an owner, a breeder, whatever it might be. Kurt, just so brilliant in putting those pieces together, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoy the pieces coming up in the future as well. The Holy Bull Stakes today. You know, obviously we play that clip because of the fact that we're celebrating Holy Bull on this Saturday down at Gulfstream with the Grade 3 Holy Bull Stakes. Nine horses have been entered into the Holy Bull. The favorite at 5-2 is Greatest Honor for Shug McGahey. This is a three-year-old son of Tappet who broke his maiden last time out at Gulfstream. That was on December 20th. So this will be his three-year-old debut. But that last effort as a two-year-old was really, really good. And you look at what he had done in his races previous. Now, he got beat three times before breaking his maiden, but came through in a big way last time out. And it wasn't like he was embarrassed. He's a horse that comes from off the pace, and he was finishing very, very well. And if you know Shug McGahey, he's a trainer that is going to bring them along and let the horse develop. Well, that's what he's done with Greatest Honor, and he seems to be moving in the right direction. Every race has been better than the previous. And if you're a fan of the late pace numbers and the brisk past performances, which, by the way, is all I use to handicap, you'll know that Greatest Honor has a decided edge over his rivals in the Holy Bull today when it comes to finishing and finishing with vigor with those late pace numbers. He earned a 110 late pace number in that maiden win last time out. The race before, when he finished second, got beat ahead, he earned a 106 late pace number. His speed figures have increased every single race. 84, 88, 92, 97. Jose Ortiz is back aboard Greatest Honor today, and he is the deserved 5-2 favorite. But he has to prove that he can take the next step, like all of these horses do. You heard Corey Lannery in the first half of the program talking about sitting on go for Dale Romans. He's a Grade 3 winner. So that presents a new challenge for Greatest Honor. Todd Pletcher has two horses entered. He has a mount and he has prime factor. Todd Pletcher has won the Holy Bull on two different occasions. A win today would put him even with Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito and his good friend Kieran McLaughlin at the top of the list with three wins in the Holy Bull Stakes. Todd won it in 2012 with Algorithms, came back in 2018 with Audible, and won it again that year. So if you're looking for a little bit of a Swami angle here, all right, I told you he has two horses, Amount and Prime Factor. Well, his previous two winners, I just told you, were Algorithms and Audible. What do those two horses have in common? Each of their names begins with the letter A. So it makes sense that Todd, if he's going to win with one of his two horses today, is going to win the Holy Bull with number four, Amount. Bet the farm on that one. And that's the kind of insight you're going to get in the expanded three-hour equine forum show. How about that? There's your Swami angle. Watch this horse jump up and win, too. But, no, seriously, great race, strong field, nine horses, and post time for the Holy Bull as race 11 on a 12-race card is 4:50 Eastern time. Time now to shift gears and put some ice in a glass and get the bottle of Four Roses off the bar and visit with my good friend Brent Elliott, who is the Master Distiller of the Year at Four Roses. This is your monthly visit with Brent. And, Brent, first of all, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, it's interesting. Typically, when you join me, we'll have kind of an idea of what we want to talk about, you know, whether it's the Four Roses Small Batch Select or whatever product we want to talk about. Brent, I'm going to tell you, I have no agenda for this interview this morning. I just wanted to have you join me and talk about bourbon as the master distiller of Four Roses. That's, you know, that should be pretty easy to do, shouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can just tell you a little bit about our product lineup, maybe.
there you go.
You know, we've got, you mentioned Small Batch Select. That was a new addition to our permanent lineup. That was 2019 that we came out with that. When we did that, it had been almost 14 years since we'd actually added something to our lineup. The one prior to that was Small Batch, the regular Small Batch. And we also have our Four Roses Bourbon and our Single Barrel. And we also have Single Barrel Private Selections, and we do limited releases occasionally. But there are really four primary bourbons in our lineup. And each one of those bourbons is different from the other one because of the way we do things. We do things very differently at Four Roses. We create 10 different recipes. So any given day, if you come to the distillery, we're creating one recipe of bourbon. And by that, I mean we're using different mash bills and different yeast strains to ferment. We have two mash bills, five yeast strains, and we put those in combination with each other. That's how we arrive at 10 recipes. And then we can take these 10 recipes and mingle them or blend them together in different combinations or different proportions to come up with the different profiles that make up those different bourbons that I just mentioned. So it's really a fun process. It makes mingling and distilling, you know, a very big part of what I do and you know, what makes Four Roses unique. So if you have a chance to try any of those bourbons, it's interesting to try them side by side, because if you look at any of those compared to each other, you're going to see those differences. And the differences, you know, there are differences in ages and proof, but I think more fundamentally you're going to see a difference because of the different recipes that go into each one of those.
Brent, how much time would you say you spend, I don't know, on a weekly basis, let's say, experimenting with different combinations of recipes and flavor combinations? Is that something that you're constantly focusing on?
Not really. That is something I love to do, but on most days, if I'm doing some blending or mingling, it's to select the right batches, the right recipes to maintain the flavor profile of whatever product we're going to bottle. Now, for the limited editions or if we're doing a new product, then it's exactly that. It's experimentation. It's trying different batches, seeing how different recipes work with each other, and that's always a lot of fun. I enjoy doing that.
You know, I have the Four Roses front and center on my bar here at the house, and I really truly enjoy it. And I'm not saying that because you're doing the interview with me this morning. It is really a wonderful product, and I remember when you and I sat down together a few years ago for the first time when I came out to Four Roses, And I had told you that, you know, I wasn't really a bourbon drinker, but I wanted to learn. And you gave me some advice. You said, you know, start with maybe putting a few cubes of ice in there and just let it mellow out a little bit and take it that direction. And, Brent, it was the best advice I've ever received. And now, you know, heck, you give me Four Roses without any ice, and it's just tremendous.
I'm happy to hear that. I think everybody can like bourbon. I wonder how everyone or anyone that doesn't, I'm just sort of confused by it. So I like to think that, you know, if someone doesn't like bourbon, they just haven't found their ways to enjoy it yet.
What's your go-to? I know you love all the products, but if you had to have one glass of Four Roses, what's your go-to?
Here recently it's been the Select.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great product. But what's different about the Select than the other Four Roses?
It's non-chill filtered, so that is different. It's a higher proof. It's 104 proof. And really the biggest difference goes back to the combination of the recipes. It just has a real unique flavor profile. It uses one of our yeast strains that creates sort of minty and herbal flavors. And so when you throw that into the mix and you combine it with a spicy yeast strain and the fruity yeast strain, it really creates a unique type of fruit with the mint. And it has a lot of mouthfeel and a nice long finish. So,
yeah, it's,
you know,
delicious.
There's something good to be said about each one of them. But that one, that's the one I've been drinking more frequently recently.
Yeah, it's delicious. I know that was kind of your baby. You put a lot of time and effort into the Four Roses Small Batch Select. Was there, Brent, an aha moment when you did a taste test or something like that and you said, that's it? That's what I'm looking for.
You know, I think the whole process was gradual, a lot of test blends. But probably the aha moment was bringing that one yeast strain with the V yeast strain, the F and the V together. And once I sort of experienced or unlocked that really unique combination of those two, that was kind of what it was all built around. So in a sense, that would be the aha moment. It was you know, unlocking that combination.
Well, Brent, listen, it's always a delight to catch up for a few minutes every month, and really appreciate you taking time here this morning. Keep up the wonderful work. We'll encourage people to go to the Four Roses website and check out the different product lines. And when they're in town, stop out to the distillery and say hello, because you guys just do a fantastic job, and really appreciate all of your support of what we do here on the network.
Well, I appreciate it, Mike, and hope to see you again soon. So, yeah, coming out whenever you can.
You will. Cheers, Brent. Brent Elliott, who is the Master Distiller of the Year at Four Roses, just does a remarkable job. And it's a cool tour when you head out there. The history at Four Roses, which is, by the way, right down in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, is spectacular. So make sure you check them out next time you're in town. Or if you are local, head out there and say hello. They just do a remarkable job with their products. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, it is time for our Calling All 3-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift and my visit with trainer Mike McCarthy talking about the Robert B. Lewis at Santa Anita. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Healthnetics CBD. For amazing relief of everyday aches and pains, try Healthnetics premium brand CBD.
Justify, a 4-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the 3-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine. We'll be right back.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
Flint Stroll in third, Case on a wide fourth, still four lengths to make up as Falcon's Fury cuts the corner, and they're into the stretch, and it is Dynamite to catch. Ingest paddles on from the rail. And then comes Flint Stroll, followed by Kason. And on the far outside, Rombauer. And they're all coming down to the line. Dynamite, here comes Rombauer to run them down. And beat Dynamite on the wire. Flint Stroll was third. And Kason finished fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Healthnetics CBD. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. And Rombauer, the call from Larry Colmus, winning the, well, big win in his maiden race, actually. Winning the maiden special weight event July 25th at Del Mar. He is 0 for 3 cents. He was second in the American Pharoah, beaten 3/4 of a length. And coming up in just a few moments, I'm going to visit with his trainer, Mike McCarthy, about Rombauer's 3-year-old debut coming up later today in the Robert B. Lewis at Santa Anita. But first, a reminder that you want to head down, if you are in town this weekend, you want to head down to Whitetail Heaven Outfitters, their elite outdoor superstore. If you're a fan of hunting or fishing or the outdoors, go see them, because as somebody who has grown up hunting their entire life, I can tell you firsthand that this is a place that you need to check out. And if you do enjoy deer hunting, turkey hunting, duck hunting, fishing, archery, the store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and they're having a huge sale this weekend. 40% off all of the camouflage products that they have, and then I believe it's 20% off store-wide. So head down to the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. They're located on Nicholasville Road, just about 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall, and they even have an indoor archery range, so you can go down there and test out your new bow. It's all pretty cool. Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall in Nicholasville, Kentucky. Well, I mentioned Mike McCarthy is going to join me from California momentarily, but first it is time for your weekly segment presented by Spendthrift. It is Calling All 3-Year-Olds.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All 3-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Last week, Oaklawn Park kicked off their 2021 season with the Smarty Jones Stakes. The Brad Cox trainee Caddo River was coming off an impressive maiden win at Churchill Downs, and he was sent off the prohibitive 3-5 choice in his first try against winners. He broke alertly from the outside post, went straight to the lead, and powered away from his competition around the far turn and down the lane to win by over 10 lengths while covering the mile in 1:38 over a track that was labeled fast but playing slow. It was very impressive, and he earned 10 Kentucky Derby points with the win. Look for him in the Grade 2 Rebel at Oaklawn on March 13th for his next start. Speaking of impressive wins, Brendan Walsh unveiled the Godolphin-owned Prevalence at Gulfstream Park last weekend. He debuted at the tough distance of 7 furlongs, but crushed the field by almost 9 lengths while in hand late. He'll probably stay in South Florida for either an allowance race or the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth on February 27th. Two big Derby preps this weekend, each worth 10 points to the winners. Gulfstream hosts the Grade 3 Holy Bull at 1/16. Todd Pletcher's Prime Factor beat maidens very easily in his debut at 6 furlongs, and he's bred to be even better around 2 turns. He's had 5 published works since his maiden win, including 2 bullets. He could be any kind. His main rivals include Sittin' on Go, who won the Grade 3 Iroquois as a 2-year-old, impressive maiden winner Greatest Honor, and both Poppy 2 and Awesome Jerry, who finished 2nd and 3rd respectively in the Mucho Macho Man Stakes. Out at Santa Anita, 3-year-olds go 1/16 in the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis. Trainer Bob Baffert has won the race a record 8 times, and it looks like this year's renewal goes through his barn once again. He sends out both Medina Spirit and Spielberg. The former was gaining ground late in the Grade 3 Sham Stakes behind Life is Good, while the latter comes off a hard-fought win in the Los Al Futurity. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Malibu Moon, the sire of 17 Grade 1 winners on dirt, second in the world only to Tappet among active sires. Malibu Moon's progeny have won as many or more of America's most celebrated dirt races as any active sire, especially for three-year-old colts, including the Kentucky Derby, Florida Derby, Santa Anita Derby, and Arkansas Derby, among others. A living legend, Malibu Moon, AP Indy's best sire, standing at Spendthrift Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, the two-year-old champ, Essential Quality, undefeated, won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile as a two-year-old. He is pointing to the Grade 3 Southwest Stakes at Oaklawn Park on February 15th for his three-year-old debut. Number two is Life is Good, an undefeated son of Into Mischief, Grade 2 San Felipe on March 6th at Santa Anita, or the Grade 2 Rebel on March 13th at Oaklawn, his next targets. Three is Senor Buscador. He's also undefeated in two starts, coming off an eye-catching win in Remington's Springboard Mile. Look for him in the Grade 2 Risen Star at Fairgrounds on February 13th. Number four is Prime Factor, an impressive maiden winner at Gulfstream in December, runs later today in the Holy Bull. And number five, Concert Tour, very impressive getting his maiden win sprinting at Santa Anita for trainer Bob Baffert, undecided where he'll show up next. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
All right, my thanks to Bobby Newman for that segment, to the folks at Spendthrift for their sponsorship of Calling All Three-Year-Olds. I'm going to call on a trainer who is going to saddle a pretty good three-year-old in today's Robert B. Lewis at Santa Anita. That is trainer Mike McCarthy, who joins me live from California this morning. Mike, good morning. Appreciate the visit.
How are you guys?
Doing well, my friend, and looking forward to seeing Rombauer get back into action later today.
Yeah, me too. Unfortunately, my owner called up last night and said he'd like to scratch and opt to go up north to the El Camino Real Derby.
Okay. All right.
So we'll have to wait another day to see Rombauer. The horse is doing very well. It's a shame he's not running today.
Yeah, it's a salty race, though, isn't it? I mean, you look up and you see two Bob Bafferts, a couple of Doug O'Neill horses, and it is just – it is salty.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be too worried about that. So we'll see. We'll run first time off the layout, going a mile and eighth on a synthetic surface, and see what happens.
Yeah, he's a very talented horse. I mean, you look back at what he did as a two-year-old, breaks his maiden on the turf at Del Mar at first asking. His second race, I guess you were probably a little bit disappointed in that, but he had a rough trip in his second race, and then second in the American Pharoah, beaten just a half length, and then he comes back and he was fifth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. How do you sum up his two-year-old campaign?
I thought it was solid. His first race out was very good. He won kind of like not even knowing what he was doing. Second race, bunch of traffic. Race was better than it looked on paper. Galloped out strong. His American Pharoah, I thought we could have made it a little lot tighter here in the finish. I don't think Mike thought he was going to be able to get to the winner and only end up getting beaten, basically a length for everything. His Breeders' Cup race, short stretch at Keeneland, on a track that was playing against him, was very good. Of course, he's had a little bit of a break since then and has come back and has trained well.
Yeah, what's his winter been like, Mike? You mentioned training well. What are you seeing from him?
He's carrying good weight, acting well, eating up, training with vigor here. This racetrack here at Santa Anita can be a little tricky to handicap sometimes in the morning. His works have been decent, but he is getting a lot out of them.
What is it that leads Mike McCarthy? And look, you've been around so many good horses, Mike, and City of Light, you got Rags to Riches rolling too. I mean, there have been some really good horses you've been around. What is it about Rombauer that gives you the confidence that he might be Kentucky Derby caliber?
I don't know what caliber he is yet. Obviously running his Breeders' Cup race is very respectable. I don't think distance is going to be an issue with him. He's not a very big horse. He's got some good mechanics. He's got Dave Foot on him that tells me he would like an off-surface, muddy racetrack. We don't see many of those out here in California, but I thought, he was a horse that's tailor-made for a racetrack like we have out here today. As far as going forward, where he goes from here, I don't know. But, if the horse continues to improve and stays healthy, who knows, maybe he could end up winning something, of some substance here later in the spring.
And talking with trainer Mike McCarthy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Ron Bauer was originally supposed to go in the Robert B. Lewis today. Instead, we'll scratch and head up north to the El Camino Real Derby. Mike, listen, I know you've got a lot of things going on, and you've got a lot of work to do, but I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with me here this morning. All the best with Ron Bauer and all of your other horses moving forward.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks so much, Mike McCarthy. And you could hear in his voice the disappointment that he didn't get the opportunity to go today. I think Mike feels like he had him sitting on go, and still doesn't know. That was a very honest answer. He still doesn't know if Ron Bauer is Kentucky Derby caliber. Doesn't know what caliber this horse is. And I think you could say that about, I talked about the Holy Bull Stakes earlier too. I think you can say that about all these horses. Right? Do we really know what caliber any of these horses are when you look ahead to the Kentucky Derby? Look, we're sitting here on January 30th, right? That's what we're doing. You have to prove that you belong. Every single race now, from here on out, you have to prove you belong. But I think Mike, you heard him say that he's going to have to scratch and head up north. I think he's disappointed that he doesn't get Ron Bauer started today to at least get a sense of where you are. And here's a horse that is versatile, right? Broke his maiden 1 mile on the turf at Del Mar. You heard the call from Larry Colmus a short time ago. He comes back and he's second, beaten just a half a length in the grade one American Pharoah on dirt at Santa Anita. And then not embarrassed in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And you heard Mike say a track that didn't play to his strengths. We talked about this, I guess about 7 or 8 shows ago now. All the different track records that were set at the Breeders' Cup this year. And the fact that speed seemed to be the way to go. Ron Bauer doesn't have a ton of early lick. He was 11th of 14 early in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He closed and was beaten 6 1/4 lengths, but he finished 5th. Respectable. And Mike McCarthy a bit disappointed he doesn't get him started today in the Robert B. Lewis. Going to visit with Doug O'Neill coming up in the third hour of the program. That's right, if you are just tuning in and you missed the news, this show expanded to 3 hours beginning today. So I'm with you all the way up until 11 a.m. Eastern. And that third hour is loaded. Doug O'Neill, toward the end of the show, right around 10:40 Eastern time. At 10 o'clock Eastern, another brand new segment. It's called In the Room with Sean Clancy. The champion jockey sits down one-on-one, jockey to jockey, each week to have a conversation. And this week's conversation is one you won't want to miss. It's with Kendrick Carmouche at 10 o'clock Eastern time. And right around 10:20, 10:25, I'll open up the phone lines. A brand new call-in segment, which will be part of this show every Saturday morning. You get a chance to participate and share your thoughts on anything in the world of horse racing. That's all in the third hour of the show, which begins at 10 o'clock Eastern. When I come back, it's your Kentucky Bred update and a look ahead to what you expect moving forward here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, 1 accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in Thoroughbred Aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the Thoroughbred industry. TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Look out, world, we're getting strong. The future's here and we belong.
She can stem, she can do more.
Like build a rocket and watch it soar.
Or clean the oceans and make the world a better place. Oh,
she can stem, so can you.
Find a cure,
invent something new.
There's no challenge in the world that she can't face.
She can stem.
Learn more at She Can Stem. A message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kelsey Grammer. When military service members head into battle, none are expected to face the enemy alone, but many return home and become isolated as they struggle with the visible and invisible wounds of war. It can be difficult knowing how to overcome that challenge and rekindle bonds similar to those formed in the military. Wounded Warrior Project supports these injured veterans through their recoveries by connecting them with fellow warriors and their communities. No one should fight this battle alone. Join us at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219 XM 201. Or streaming at horseracingradio.net.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
And time now for your monthly Kentucky Bred update. Unbridled potential, that's exactly what you'll find when you race and breed in Kentucky. Over $170 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders since 2006, and with purse money soaring, exceeding $118 million in 2020, thanks to Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Funds, along with the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's no better time to race in the Bluegrass State. In addition, the American Graded Stakes Committee's upgraded races for 2021 include the following stakes in Kentucky. At Kentucky Downs, the Franklin Simpson Stakes has been upgraded to Grade 2 from a Grade 3. The Kentucky Turf Cup also goes to a Grade 2 from Grade 3. The Tourist Mile is now a Grade 3 after previously being a listed stakes, and stakes gaining listed status in 2021 are the Kentucky Cup Classic at Turfway, Dueling Grounds Oaks at Kentucky Downs, and the Kentucky Downs Preview Ladies Turf and Kentucky Downs Preview Tourist Mile at Ellis Park. Kentucky Breds, breed them, race them, we all win. For more information, visit KentuckyBreds.com and register KBIF.com. Well, hour number three comes up next, and I told you about some of the different features that you're going to hear in that third hour of the program. One feature that we launched about a month ago now, at the beginning of the year, is Unsung Heroes, and it's presented by Claiborne, and it recognizes and celebrates the unsung heroes in our sports: grooms, hot walkers, exercise riders, starting gate crew members, farm employees, office workers who do so much to make our sport a success but rarely find themselves in the spotlight. If you have someone you feel is an unsung hero and you want to nominate them to that segment, all you have to do is email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know the story of that person and why you think they should be recognized as racing's unsung hero. mike@horseracingradio.net. Well, that's going to do it for the first 2 hours of the Equine Forum, but I am a long way from being done here this morning. The first ever 3-hour equine forum show continues all the way up to 11 a.m. Eastern. I'm going to kick off the third hour with another brand new weekly segment that I think you are absolutely going to love. It is In the Room with Sean Clancy, a conversation with journeyman jockey Kendrick Carmouche. I'm also going to give you the chance to be part of the show as I open up the phone lines in a brand new weekly call-in segment coming up at 10:20 Eastern Time. And if your local station is indeed leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219 XM 201 in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680 or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming continuing at horseracingradio.net. It's a big, big show as I break new ground and barrel full steam ahead into an entirely new frontier. For the first time in the 20-plus year history of the show, I say, Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is coming up next right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by HealthNetics CBD.
Lady Apple to the inside, street fan Serengeti Empress. Lady Apple gets up. Lady is up by a neck. It's Lady Apple to get the win.
Last year's Ladies Classic was probably Lady Apple's best run of her career. And obviously we're trying to recreate that again Sunday. I'm extremely happy with how she's been training and how she looks going into Sunday's race.
Greatest Honor has powered past, inconvenienced around the first turn. He'll win anyway. Greatest Honor, and an impressive winner. He wins a length and a half.
You know, then he came down here and, you know, he was able to beat the horses on the lead after getting knocked around some going into the first turn. And I thought he really finished up well. And I do think it's a little bit of a process with him. But, you know, he's a horse that's going to run that far. He's a national two-turn route horse. And, you know, whether a mile or 16th, we'll probably have to get a little help in front. But, you know, we'll just see from there.
It is Motion Emotion in full stride in the final furlong. She leads by three. Motion Emotion has won it.
What a wonderful opportunity Spendthrift's given us with this filly. She's absolutely beautiful, all class, trains extremely well. She is training exceptionally well. And she does have races to go back on that could put her in the winner's circle on Sunday as well.
The Great One tries to cling on as Spielberg throws down the gauntlet. Spielberg comes at the Great One. Photo, head-bobbing finish. It's either the Great One or Spielberg.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Well, welcome back. For the first time in the history of the show, I say welcome to Hour 3 of the Equine Forum, presented by HealthNetics CBD here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, officially ushering in an exciting new era with our flagship program. This is the show that launched a network, and today we launch a whole new hour with special features, a call-in segment where you get to be part of the show. Yes, here is Mike Pena. I am here with you today and happy to be bringing you this third hour of the program. This has been a concept that we've had in mind for a while now, and to be able to do this is really special. And I appreciate everybody staying with me here on the third hour of the program and looking forward to taking your phone calls coming up in just about 20 minutes or so when I open up the phone lines for that special listener call-in segment. If you missed any portion of this show or any of our shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, another way that you can access the programs. Poll question today, and so many of you have taken time to weigh in, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, which of today's three-year-old stakes races is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner? And I got to be honest, I'm a little surprised by the results. Gave you four choices: the Swale, the Holy Bull, the Kitten's Joy, or the Robert B. Lewis at Santa Anita. Of course, the first three are all at Gulfstream today. No surprise that the Holy Bull and the Robert B. Lewis would be the two that would be getting most of the attention, but there are 7% of you said you think it's the Swale. 5% said, okay, it's the Kitten's Joy, which is a turf race, but you could see a horse go to the Kentucky Derby from there. Sure you could. But 47% of you thinking it's the Holy Bull, whereas 41% are saying it's the Robert B. Lewis. I think the Robert B. Lewis is the more difficult of the two Derby preps today. If I was voting, I'd have to vote for the Robert B. Lewis. I'm going to talk with trainer Doug O'Neill, who sends out a pair of horses in that race. He'll be with me at 10:40 Eastern time this morning. Looking forward to that visit. He'll saddle Hot Rod Charlie and wipe the slate. Of course, when you talk about the Robert B. Lewis, it's all about Bob Baffert, and he has a couple of horses in there today, too. Bob has won the Holy Bull, or the Holy Bull, the Robert B. Lewis, a record 8 times, including each of the past 2 years. Won it last year with 1,000 Words and the year before with Mucho Gusto. So he's going to be a tough out, but so is Doug O'Neill. And if you were listening to my interview with Mike McCarthy in the previous hour, Rombauer is going to scratch from the Robert B. Lewis and head up north and point for the El Camino Real Derby at Golden Gate. So keep that in mind as you're handicapping the race. All right, so a lot of things to get to here this morning in the third hour of the program, including another brand new segment, which I am extremely excited about. This is the debut of a segment you will hear every week as part of our expanded Equine Forum show. Former champion jockey Sean Clancy steps into our virtual jocks room to bring you a unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation exploring the life and careers of riders both past and present. It's a really fun conversation this morning. So without further ado, let's go in the room with Sean Clancy, presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com.
Good save with Kendrick Carmouche, looking for career win number 3,000, and he has done it. Good saves, got it by 3. That's 3,000 career winners for jockey Kendrick Carmouche.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
This is Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Kendrick Carmouche. Kendrick, winner of 3,356 races, the leading jockey at Aqueduct Fall Meet, and atop the standings at Aqueduct Winter Meet. Kendrick, you're rolling. How's that feel?
It feels wonderful, you know, to just be riding good horses, and I'm riding at the top of my game right now, you know, like I always have. I just always needed the horse. It just feels so good just, you know, to do what I was born to do, and is to show off my talent.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, out of all the jockeys, you were definitely born to do it. I mean, your dad was a jockey, and take me back to being a kid growing up in Louisiana. I mean, was there any other options for you? I mean, you really just set out to be a jockey from day one.
Oh, I was set out to be jockey from day one. You know, just living the country life. Just me and my brothers and my sisters had a couple Shetland ponies. My dad rode horses, and you know, I'd always just. I loved that horse. I loved the animal. You know, I was brought to the horse at a young age, and I fell in love with pretty much any animal. You know, it's just you got to have that feeling for him. And, you know, my dad pretty much just let me follow him around. He never taught me too much. He just told me pay attention and listen, and you got to learn more. You got to question, ask. And, you know, at this point right now, this is where I'm at right now. This is where it got me.
Describe your first, riding, I guess it was in the Louisiana bush tracks. I mean, what was that like for a kid? I mean, that's where you kind of started really riding thoroughbreds, I guess, right?
I tell you, well, you know,
thoroughbreds.
Now, my dad broke horses for, my dad broke thoroughbreds and quarter horses when I was younger. And, you know, I started that way because he taught us how to just get along with the animal and learn how to rein the horse. And, you know, you got to go step by step when you come in. Up in the country, and you know, you don't have everything that you should have to get on the horse, but you're gonna get on him to make sure you learn how to ride one first. And you know, I always was a little skittish about letting horses go faster when I was younger, so my dad never did push me as much, you know, so a little bit more advanced than me. Then he just galloped and rode for a while, and I just was like, at one point I told my dad, take me to the bush track, I want to try it. You know, I never went fast before. That's one way I want to learn how to go fast. And I tell you, he put me in the gate. I never broke out the gate before. He was sitting in the gate with me, and one of my best friends, like family, pulled the gate. And he was like, you do this, and you do this, and you're going to be, the horse going to take you out the gate. And ever since then, I was addicted by contact.
I love it. How old were you then? I mean, you're a little
kid. Oh, man, I was 14 years old, and when I rode on the bush, I rode one horse on the bush track. I've never done it again. I just wanted the experience because my dad done it all his career, you know, later in his career. So, you know, I wanted to have something that put me with him and his heart and made him feel good, see me do it, you know?
Sure, yeah. And then your first race, I mean, I look back at Delta Downs, April 7th, 2000, and you broke next to your dad that day. I mean, that had to be quite an experience, right?
That was nervous, man. I was so nervous that night. I'll never forget that night. That's the nervousest I've ever been in the gate ever in my life. I was like, wow. I knew how to do everything because I was riding for like three years before I even started when I was 16. But it's just, if you don't have nerves, you're never going to overcome your situation. And they gave me my license the same night. The stewards walked downstairs and handed me my license. They said, you're good to go. Thank you.
And what was your dad like? Was he giving you, was he coaching you? I mean, going to the
car
or in the gate?
No. One thing about my dad, a silent teacher. My dad is a very silent teacher. He pay attention. He'll watch you for a little while. See if you keep making the same mistake, then he's going to correct you.
Wow. I was lucky enough to meet your dad at Saratoga a few years back, and you can tell, I mean, the pride that he has in you, seeing you do what you're doing. I mean, it's got to be a good feeling for a son.
This is what you're supposed to want to do in life for your parents and for yourself and for your family and all your loved ones. And, you know, hey, this is what we was born to do. Most people just want to come and just take life the way it, no, you got to go get life.
And your big move, I mean, early on, you didn't stay in Louisiana long. You were at Philadelphia Park shortly thereafter. I mean, describe that move. I mean, was that nerve-wracking, or were you confident to go there? What was that like?
Well, it was just my mom and dad always told me never pass up on opportunities. So, you know, I felt like, you know, every opportunity closer and closer to bigger races and bigger places I should go. And, you know, my dad and my mom knew a trainer named Randy Allen and Lisa Allen and from Texas. And they got in touch. They was in Philadelphia and Jack Service called me, John Service uncle. And after that, Jack Service the name, Service the game. He took me from Louisiana, and that's all she wrote from there. He just told me hard work and save your money, and that's all it ever been from there. And just keep your head down, work hard.
Right, for sure. And seven titles at Philadelphia. I mean, that was you were obviously a dominant rider around Mid Atlantic, and then the move to New York. I mean, describe that. I mean, again, another step up the ladder. You felt ready to do that. I mean, again, nerve wracking, or what was that like?
You know, for the first year, I had to get used to they ovals because they ovals are different than smaller track ovals. And, you know, it didn't take me long to adjust because you got to learn how to pace the horse better than what you're usually moving on a smaller mile track. You know, I made a lot of mistakes the first year. I wish I could take it back. I'm sure most jockeys wish they can take a lot of races back, but you know, you got to learn from them and, you know, sit a little longer. Ride a little bit better horses that like what you see I'm getting now, and just ride smart. That's the whole point of it. You know, you know, it was tough, but you know, I stayed in the fight. I like a fight. I'm a fighter.
Two things to me stand out with your riding. One is your positive attitude. I mean, you're always upbeat, always smiling. And two, in a race, I think you consistently try to find a position, but go forward. I mean, you're aggressive to find a position or to get a stalking position or near the lead rather than taking back and getting that position. Talk me through those two things. I mean, the positive attitude, was that always your style or is that something you learned?
Yes. Yes, I learned that straight off from my dad. I mean, my dad always positive, always happy, you know. You know, I saw how he dealt with people and how much people loved him, and people came around him because of his positivity, and he always gave kind words, and, you know, I just figured that was the right way to do it. If you see people coming around a good person like that, and I took it. I ran with it. My mom, the same way, she has the same vibe. You know, it's just... you know, being positive just can only make your situation stay steady and good for as long as you're going to keep it good. That's what I always thought in my mind. Because, you know, not always is going to be good, but if you're strong enough mentally, you can overcome whenever you're down. And when it is good, it's gonna feel that much better.
Do you ever get down? I mean, I've never seen you down.
I don't get down, man. I don't understand it. I don't believe in it. You know, it's not the way of life. You know, you're supposed to be happy and joyful, you know? So, you know, I want to bring that energy all around to people, my family, my kids, everybody. And horses feel whenever you feel some type of way. So you always got to be positive energy on your horse. Because they feel negativity. It's no different than a cat, a dog. They know when something is not right with their owner. You feel me?
Sure. Yeah. I understand. No, I get it. And then your style of riding. I mean, is that something you learned over the years, or is that just a natural? I mean, to me, it's you're very much get a position but go forward.
Oh, I look at it like this: if you're a good gate rider, use it to your advantage. Stick to your position. 1, 2, 3. A lot of horses win from way off the pace. They win from off the pace a lot. But you're never going to see a horse make up that much ground coming from behind when they 1, 2, 3. They 9 times out of 10, they're the last two horses finishing in the race to win it.
Right, sure.
You know, you can let horses drop back if you feel like you got the best horse and you're sitting 5th or 6th. But, if I can get my horse a breather the first quarter of a mile and I'm already relaxed and I'm already in my position, why take it away from him?
And this winter, I mean, you obviously win in the fall aqueduct title. I mean, that had to be a good feeling winning your first Grade 1 on True Timber. I mean, what's it like to get on that kind of roll? I mean, that kind of momentum. I mean, it's got to be a good feeling for a jockey, and then it kind of builds upon itself, I guess.
Yeah, it's all about the opportunity, you know, to help. You know, they gave me the horses to shine, and I feel like, you know, I've been working up to this moment, so I know what I have to do whenever I get the opportunity. And, you know, True Timber, winning that race, winning a Grade 1 20 years later in my career. I mean, I probably never could have get it early in my career because I was at smaller tracks building momentum to get to this point. But, man, guys, it feels so good to get it at this point. Like, I don't know if I was going to feel that good earlier in my career to get it and wait this much longer to get it again. You know, it feels so good, man. It really do. And to come back, win the title. I mean, I win 7 titles in parks. That's really important to me, and what I lay down year-round racing is really hard to maintain 7 titles in one place because they got different riders, different bug riders come in, and they get hot, and you got to maintain the whole situation. But to get a title in New York, I mean, wow, guys, I mean, I'm old. Cajun boy from Louisiana. I mean, I'm a mud bug, man. I mean, has that ever happened before? Truthfully, I represent my Louisiana people to the fullest, and I just I can't scratch my head. I don't think it happened before. I'm holding it down, man. I'm holding it down. It's the boot, baby.
That's brilliant. This year with the social unrest with George Floyd and the racial divide, I mean, you came out and spoke about that. What was that like for you? I mean, you're one of the few black riders in the room. And I mean, is that something, I think that was obviously upsetting to you, and you kind of wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, I feel the situation that happened with that guy was really eye-opening to me, and not just George, it's a lot of them before him, after him. You know, I don't understand how people can still have hatred in their heart. And we're in a new millennium, 2021. I mean, we have, it blows my mind because, you know, I never was raised that way. I didn't see color as anything besides a color. And, you know, we all ate together, we all cooked together, we all danced together in Louisiana, you know. We family. I don't see how people just, you know, I can understand the grudge, but it has to We can't just keep feeding our generations this over and over, and they're going to live it past we dead. You can't keep doing that. And it just bothered me, you know. It just made me fight a little bit harder in my situation, you know, and just try to break my kids' future up just because, you know, I have mixed kids. And, you know, don't let that stop you and let that get in the way that you got a different color than other people, you know.
And do you talk to your two kids about that? I mean, Olivia is your daughter and your son.
Oh,
Kendrick.
They 11 and 14. They mama sit them down. We sit down. We explain it. I mean, they love going to Louisiana seeing they Cajun cousins. They love it. They love it. Do they stand out the probably 15, 20, my little nieces and nephews? Yes, they got a different color. But you know what? When you look at them, they all playing together. They all enjoying each other. They know what it is. They don't let it affect their lives. Don't let it affect their lives. That's what I tell them.
That's a good message. Yeah, and that's your, you kind of take that as a role. I mean, you're a role model to them and role model to others that, you know, go out there and ply your trade with a positive attitude and try to make a positive difference, I guess.
We all have the same chance in life. People don't sit down to understand that in life. We all have a chance. It's if you want to take that chance.
Kendrick Carmouche making the most of his chance. Kendrick, thanks for the time this morning, and we're rooting for you. You're a great role model for everybody in the sport.
Thank you, my brother. And one more thing before I leave, peace and love.
Peace and love. That's Kendrick Carmouche. Peace and love.
What a visit with Kendrick Carmouche. My thanks to Sean Clancy and to Kendrick for making that segment possible. You'll hear it every week, In the Room with Sean Clancy, a visit, a one-on-one conversation with a rider in our sport, and some really interesting stuff from the self-described mudbug from Louisiana, Kendrick Carmouche. Fun guy, and congrats to him on all of his success. All right, when I come back, another brand new segment. This time, you get the chance to be part of the show. I'm opening up the phone lines. The phone number to call is 888-966-4776. That's 888-966-HRRN. I'll open up the phone lines. You weigh in on anything you want to talk about. If you want to talk about today's Holy Bull Stakes, you want to talk about the Robert B. Lewis, you want to talk about the Eclipse Awards from the other night, how about our poll question? Which three-year-old stakes race is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner today? Is it the Robert B. Lewis? Is it the Holy Bull? Well, if you want to weigh in on that, you can do that too. It is all next, 888-966-4776. Line up now. I'm back in about 2 minutes. This is the Equine Forum on HRN, presented by Healthnetics CBD. For amazing relief of everyday aches and pains, try Healthnetics premium brand CBD.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available. Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6 who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home! Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War! Will Take Charge and Final Man! Mucho Macho Man! He did it over Will Take Charge!
Mucho Macho Man has produced two first crop Grade 1 winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred Mucho Unusual all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adina Springs.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
New York traffic trying so hard, and he is closing the gap now. Here comes New York traffic after Authentic. Authentic, New York traffic are going to hit it together. Here it is. Photo finish, Authentic and New York traffic.
Authentic is dragging in. Tis the law all out to get by him. Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the law. Here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Authentic hanging top in the final furlong and leads it by 2.5 legs. Improbable, then Global Campaign, Tacitus, Tis the Law, all behind Authentic, who strides away in the Keeneland sunset for John Velasquez. Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, some highlights of those three grade ones for newly crowned Horse of the Year, Authentic, who stands at Spendthrift. What a year he had last year. Of course, champion three-year-old as well. And well-deserved Horse of the Year title. If you want to call in right now and you want to talk about the Eclipse Awards and you want to talk about the Robert B. Lewis, you want to talk about the Holy Bull, let me know who you like in those races. All you have to do is dial 888-966-4776. This is a brand new segment I'm going to have every week on the show. So I understand some of you are thinking, well, wait a minute, we actually get to call into the Equine Forum? I thought I had to wait till Thursday nights in the BrisNet.com call-in show. Yeah, you can do that too. But every week, I'm going to give you the chance now to be part of the Equine Forum. So 888-966-4776. Give me a call. They say nobody likes to be first. Well, somebody has to be first. I'll tell you what I'll do. For the first three callers in the next 15 minutes here, I'm going to send you an HRRN ball cap. So how about that? So just give my producer, Lee, your information when you call in, and we'll make sure we get that out to you. And basically your email address will work, and I can email you and get your address, and we'll go from there. 888-966-4776. The first three callers get a officially licensed HRRN ball cap, and we can talk about the Robert B. Lewis. We can talk about Eclipse. We can talk about the Sam Houston Racing Festival, if you want, coming up tomorrow. Or we can talk about the Holy Bull. And by the way, an update to that poll question, which three-year-old stakes race today is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner? The majority of you still leaning in the direction of the Holy Bull. 49% of the vote coming in for the Holy Bull, 40% coming in for the Robert B. Lewis. You had 6% for the Swale and 5% for the Kitten's Joy, which is not out of the ordinary. I kind of thought that might be the case, but I still think the Robert B. Lewis is the stronger of the two. When you take a look at the two Bob Baffert horses, number eight Spielberg, who won the Los Alamitos Futurity last time, got up by a nose to defeat the Great One, who we know is a really good horse, and then Medina Spirit, who was second in the Grade 3 Sham last time out. That is, he's got the one horse, and he's got the outside horse in Spielberg. That is a pretty good set of bookends for Bob Baffert, who has won the Robert B. Lewis on eight different occasions. And then Hot Rod Charlie from the barn of Doug O'Neill, who was second at odds of 94-1 in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Hot Rod Charlie for trainer Doug O'Neill, one of two horses that he has. He surprised everybody with that effort in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but today he's a much shorter price. He's 3-1 on the morning line. It just seems to me, he also has wiped the slate, by the way, as Doug O'Neill, and he's going to be with me at 10:40 Eastern time this morning. It just seems to me like the horses that are in the Robert B. Lewis at this point in their careers just appear to be more accomplished. They have proven more than the horses in the Holy Bull. Now, the question is which of the stakes races is most likely to produce a Kentucky Derby winner? Well, you may feel there's more upside for the horses that are in the Holy Bull. Obviously, 49% of you do. You feel there's more upside for those horses. And it's hard to argue with that because there are some talented runners in there. We talked about Sitting on Go from the barn of trainer Dale Romans. The favorite, Greatest Honor, for Shug McGahey certainly seems to be going in the right direction and appears a horse that could make an impact. Prime Factor, who debuted with a monster win for Todd Pletcher, won by nearly 9 lengths. He's 3-1 on the morning line in there. And then Todd's other horse, Amount, looked good, winning by more than 5 lengths in his debut on December 26th. So give me a call, 888-966-4776. First three callers in the next 12 minutes or so, we're going to come fast and furious, are going to receive an HRRN ball cap. And somebody who wants one is my good friend Stuart Morris, who is on the line right now. Stu, what's up, brother?
Hey, man, how you doing today?
I'm good. You getting back from Ocala?
I'm in South Georgia right now, driving home.
Good man. What's on your mind, brother?
Well, first thing I want to tell you, I think the new format's great, and I'm really excited for you guys. I think it's a really exciting future for this year, and I'm looking forward to this three-hour show every Saturday.
Thank you, man.
Well, I was going to talk about the race in California. The one horse of Doug O'Neill's was actually pinhooked by some good friends of mine, Bob Feld and Sean Feld.
Good people.
I think he's a half-brother of Matoli, right?
Yeah, is that the horse that was second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And
Hot Rod
Bob
Charlie.
And Sean have been buying a lot of good horses for a long time, and that horse has got a real pedigree. And I think I'm most excited to see if he can show back up and put some real form into that Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year. And certainly a big performance from him today would make, I think, our Eclipse Award winner the leader in the clubhouse for the division after that, right?
Yeah, how good does that make Essential Quality look if Hot Rod Charlie comes back and wins this race today?
That's what I'm saying, and I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I think the West Coast race looks like it could produce a legitimate Derby contender winner today just because there's more form there and it looks like a tougher field with some guys with real stroke and some big, deep water.
Yeah. Based on potential, I think a lot of people are thinking maybe the Holy Bull Stakes. Of course, don't you think, Stuart, there's always this bit of an East Coast bias in our sport, too, where those horses seem to get a little more attention than the West Coast horses?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think that's just probably due to there's more of us, I guess, on the East Coast than the West Coast. But there is very much an East Coast bias. I believe that is fair. And the ironic thing is the West Coast horses keep showing up year after year and raising the bar, so I think we probably should take more credence and more importance in these races on the West Coast than we do, but I think that's probably a fair statement just by human nature, right?
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you're right. Well, listen, man, I appreciate the phone call, and drive carefully on the way home, and hopefully I'll catch up with you next week, brother.
We'll see you next week, bud. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Stuart Morris. Look, he sponsors that segment in the first half of the program, right? Our industry star of the week that I've been bringing you for the past few years now. And that's an incredible segment where I get to recognize an individual in the sport that is doing some great things that maybe you're not even familiar with that person. You know, this week's guest that I got a chance to honor, David Walters, who picked up his 1,500th win at Charlestown back on January 13th. He's a great story, and there are so many great stories in our sport. Give me a call, 888-966-4776. Still plenty of time for you to get in. We've got about 10 minutes, somewhere in there, 8 minutes left in this segment before we have to get to a commercial break. And again, you give me a call, we'll send you an HRN ball cap. But he's right about that California race. I really believe that if you're voting in the poll question, that's the race most likely to produce a Kentucky Derby winner, just comparing them side by side, right? And I think because of the fact that so many of those horses have already proven to be great at stakes caliber, whereas in the Holy Bull, outside of Sitting on Go, who is a Grade 3 winner, all the other horses still have to prove that they belong at that level. But it seems like most of HRN Nation disagrees with me, and they think the Holy Bull Stakes is the way to go in terms of the race most likely to produce a Kentucky Derby winner. 888-966-4776. Again, this is a brand new segment. I get it. I get that it's going to be a little slow to kick things off, and that's all well and good. But you're going to be able to do this every single week with this new three-hour format now. And right around this 10:20 Eastern mark, you'll get a chance to share your thoughts on anything related to the sport of thoroughbred racing. It can be the stakes races that are coming up on Saturday afternoons or the weekend. It can be looking back on something that happened the previous week. You know, one question that got a lot of play on our social media earlier this week was quite simple. Do you have your Derby horse picked out yet? Do you have your Derby horse picked out? If you want to call and let me know that, go for it. 888-966-4776. Let's go back to the phone lines. Ralph in Nashville is with me here on the Equine Forum. Ralph, good morning.
Good morning. Congrats on the new format and already a great show, a great interview with Kendrick there. I just had a question about the Triple Crown. You're talking about the races. I was just curious to make sure, is the Triple Crown format back to the traditional format, including the weeks between the races? And just thought on the what's your thoughts on the future pools? And that I think they only do one sire future wager, if they thought maybe they would increase that. Congratulations, and we'll keep listening.
Yeah, Ralph, appreciate the phone call, and we'll make sure we get you one of the HRN ball caps here. Yeah, you know, from every, and I was just talking about this past week, actually, from everything that we're hearing, it sounds like things will be back to normal. We know the Derby is back to the first Saturday in May, still waiting on Pimlico to announce what they're going to do with the Preakness Stakes. And, of course, Belmont was adamant about keeping it in June last year, so can't see them moving off of their June date. So I would assume, and haven't heard officially yet, but I would assume that we're going to see everything kind of back to normal. The question will be, you know, will there be fans allowed by the first Saturday in May? I'm sure there will in some capacity. I know that the Masters announced that they're going to welcome fans back to Augusta this year for that prestigious golf tournament, albeit a limited number of fans. So that's one question that I have, is how racing is going to handle that. Obviously, Churchill Downs is plenty big enough, and Pimlico and Belmont certainly big enough to welcome fans back if the states allow them to do so. And hopefully we can get back to a normal schedule. So, yes, to answer your question, I do believe we're going to be back to the traditional Derby, Preakness, Belmont schedule that we've seen over the years. Yeah, and in terms of the future wagers, wouldn't it be neat to see another future wager on the sires added? That's, you know, it's a different way to handicap it. A different way to handicap, you can handicap the horses, but then you have to kind of look and say, okay, which sires are represented by the most runners, number one, and the most quality runners, number two. So it's a neat way to handicap the Kentucky Derby from the breeding side of it. And really do appreciate the call there. And we'll move on to the next caller. That is Aaron in Kentucky. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Can you hear me?
I got you, brother. What's up?
Welcome back me to your show, and boy, you got a great format now. Thanks. I'll be back tuning in more often.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. I appreciate it.
It's the first time I've been able to catch you this new year, but boy, what a treat. So anyway, congratulations, Mike. Keep up the good work. Long time listener, just been away for a while. And I'm headed home to our bluegrass state from Texas myself on the road. To your poll question, well, I'll be honest with you, Mike, not to be contrary, but I don't think the Derby winner is in either race unless it happens to be Shug's horse, and he's on the pass that like Orb was. But nevertheless, my pick would be the Holy Bull just for the strength of the race. It's kind of a toss-up out west between Baffert and O'Neill, and I'd lean toward O'Neill, but that's just my contrary answer, okay?
Yeah, it's a great point, Aaron. Do you have your Derby horse picked out yet?
I'm sorry, I'll say it again.
Do you have a Derby horse picked out yet, a horse that you have your eye on?
Well, I got a 8-1 on Essential Quality, and that's the only thing I'm leaning toward yet, although I think it's a little early. But Brad Cox is loaded with two of them right now, seeing Caddo River last weekend. But it's kind of like, ask me that question again first of March or something. But you have to lean toward Essential Quality. He's got it all. And it'd be great for Brad Cox just to get in the Derby for his first time after the Clips Award. And then, as it would stand right now, he'd be the favorite, despite whatever Baffert's saying. So, my opinion.
Yep. Yeah, well, Aaron, listen, appreciate the phone call. Thank you for coming back. Happy to have you back on board with the Equine Forum, and call me every week. Really appreciate you being on board this morning.
Not your fault I've been gone. I just hadn't had the opportunity to tune in. But like I say, again, kudos for your new format and the 3 hours. It's great, Mike. Thanks, man. See you now.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Drive careful. Aaron in Kentucky. Look, you're going to get a chance. This is going to become a segment where we're going to be coming fast and furious, maybe even expanded a little bit if the phone calls continue to come in. But this was the first go-round. Thank you to Stuart and to Ralph and to Aaron for giving me a phone call. We'll get caps out to each of those individuals. And tune in next week, same time, right around this 10:20, 10:25 mark. I will open up the phone lines for this call-in segment, and you'll get a chance to be part of the show and talk racing. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, I will visit with trainer Doug O'Neill, who has two horses set to go to the post in today's Robert B. Lewis. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Healthnetics CBD. For amazing relief of everyday aches and pains, try Healthnetics premium brand CBD.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But they'll have to fly if they want to beat Prevalence, and let's be serious, nobody's beating Prevalence. Prevalence under hand and heels handling. Look at him go away. Prevalence, the son of Medaglia Doro. What do you say? Wow!
Prevalence, the three-year-old son of Darley Stallion Medaglia Doro, was made a TDN Rising Star following that debut win last Saturday, vaulting him into the TDN's top 12 favorites for this year's Kentucky Derby and making Prevalence your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia Doro, the leading sire by average at the 2020 yearling sales. No stallion can match his $20 million yearling since 2016. And in 2021, Medaglia Doro will have his best bred crop ever hit the racetrack as two-year-olds. Learn more about Medaglia Doro and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
But now here's Great Hunter, and Great Hunter suddenly coming, bursting out the pack as the purple cap on the grandstand side. And Great Hunter, full a run now. He strikes the front with an eighth of a mile to go. St. Paul's hanging south. Sam Fee's in there as well. They come to the 16th pole now, and Great Hunter striding home, leads it by two lengths. Sam Fee, St. Paul has dropped back in third. Great Hunter's going on to win it, though. The son of aptitude, Great Hunter, has won the Robert Lewis Stakes from Sam Fee. In the third spot was St. Paul, and Boutros ran on four.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Healthnetics CBD. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you, getting ready to wind down the first ever three-hour Equine Forum show, the expanded format. So many of you have been so nice to send me messages and chime in on how much you enjoy the new format and the new segments we've added. I think you're going to enjoy this next interview, too. You just heard Trevor Denman with the call of the Robert B. Lewis when Doug O'Neill earned his very first win in that race with Great Hunter. That was back in 2007. He came back again in 2012 with I'll Have Another, who, as we know, went on to do some pretty cool things, including being one of two Kentucky Derby winners for Doug O'Neill. And Doug is with me now. He has two horses entered in the Robert B. Lewis as he begins a quest for a third Derby title today. Doug, first of all, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, everything's good, brother. Really happy to hear your voice and excited to talk about this Robert B. Lewis and talk about some three-year-olds. First of all, let's start with the call we just heard, Great Hunter. As you were listening to that call and you hear the name Great Hunter, some of the things that pop into your head.
Oh, God, well, just how grateful I am for Paul and Villa Redham. I mean, I wouldn't be here without them, and Great Hunter was one of our early horses of talent, and yeah, those are great memories, and he was a great horse.
Yeah, he was pretty special. I know you're fond of the other horse that won the Robert B. Lewis II in 2012, a little horse by the name of I'll Have Another.
Yeah, he that was really a shocker. He had been training great, but he was coming off a pretty long layoff, and that was a pretty ambitious spot to bring him back in. But, man, that really started the role that the next 5.5 months or so brought us. It was what a cool horse. And now I'll Have Another is back with Paul and Zilla at their place in Bonzo, California. So it's cool. We got him back, so it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's a special thing. And he, of course, gave you that first Kentucky Derby win back in 2012. What's different, being a two-time Derby winner now, Doug, what's different when you start down the road to the Kentucky Derby with these prep races what's different now as opposed to when you, before you won that first one with I'll Have Another and you were starting to go down this road?
Well, that's a good good question. I haven't really thought about it, but, prior to the I'll Have Another year, we were just giddy to be on the Derby road. And didn't really know what to expect. So now having been down that road and getting lucky enough to win a couple times, I think now we know what to expect, which is a bonus. And you just try to every day realize how blessed you are to be around a horse that's good enough to compete at that level and good enough to talk about making Churchill Downs in the first Saturday in May. So it's just really exciting, and it's fun with like Hot Rod Charlie today. It's all a bunch of guys who have never been down that journey before. So it'd be so cool if he stays injury free, can take us all there. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, just Stuart Morris called in the previous call-in segment, our new call-in segment that we launched this week, and he mentioned that Hot Rod Charlie was a pinhook by Bob and Sean Feld, who are, of course, very close friends of you and the family. And, pretty cool stuff with Hot Rod Charlie. Some ties to HRN and to the history of Doug O'Neill there.
God, I know. Honestly, God, I'd be flipping burgers. The one for Jude Feld and his brother Bob. Who,
there it is.
Poor guy. And it wouldn't be good burgers, believe me. But, and then Jude is the one who gave me my first shank to start hot walking, and then when I went on my own, Bob Feld was kind enough to find me some owners early on. So the Feld family is like my second family, and I completely forgot that they were very instrumental in the pinhooking of Hot Rod Charlie. So makes even that much more special.
He surprised a lot of people in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile when he was second behind eventual Juvenile Champion Essential Quality at 94-1. Did he surprise you?
You know, honestly, yes, but, we brought him there because we always thought he had talent. And actually, the first three races, he was odds-on favorite and ran subpar, and we were scratching our heads like, what is going on? And Leandro Mora, my main man, the brains of the outfit, mentioned putting blinkers on him. And when he won that day at Santa Anita, going two turns on the dirt with the blinkers on, we were like, aha, that was the missing link. So that kind of led us thinking of the Breeders' Cup. And then we were outside looking in until the day before entries. And I think Dale Romans had one get sick or drop out, and that got us in the body of the field. So, we had a lot of things go our way to get in there. And then, he ran a heck of a race. That was pretty awesome.
What have the past few months been like for Hot Rod Charlie?
Well, it's a great group of guys, Bill Strauss and Greg Helm and my nephew Patrick and his boys from the Brown football team. And, after that race, we celebrated as if we had won, which we felt like winners. And we huddled up and said, let's give him a couple weeks of a whole lot of nothing, which we did. And so he's had a good little vacation, and then we started picking up the training, and Joel Rosario's worked him two or three times, and he's like us and love him. And so he's coming in fresh and ready, and hopefully we can pick up where we left off there at Keeneland.
Have you noticed anything different about him as he gets ready for his three-year-old debut as opposed to what you saw during his juvenile campaign?
You know, sometimes you're just too close to the picture to really see the development. But, you know, he's a mature dude. And I think the he's just a very talented, curious colt. And the blinkers really made him focus in competition. So, you know, I think we're just we're seeing just maturity in front of our eyes. But, again, you see it every day, so it's hard to really see the big difference. But just a classy dude. He's got that perfect combination of calm and relaxed in the stall and very competitive on the racetrack. And that's generally good horses have that those characteristics.
The other horse you'll saddle later today in the Robert B. Lewis is number 7, Wipe the Slate, who is a son of your 2016 Kentucky Derby winner, Nyquist. He broke his maiden impressively last time out on December 26th. Now steps up. The waters get a bit deeper. Tell me more about Wipe the Slate.
Well, yeah, being by Nyquist, obviously, he's family. You know, we've been excited about each and every one of the Nyquists that we've been lucky enough to have here, and he's no exception. He's trained like a first-round draft pick since day one. He's a chestnut, so he actually looks a lot more like I'll Have Another than he does Nyquist. But he's an extremely talented colt. You know, we liked him a lot going into his debut, and he ran into Life is Good of Baffert's, who kind of freaked that day. But, you know, he came back. We added blinkers to him. And he got a perfect track and attack kind of trip. So if he can translate that, like you say, going two turns, winners, you know, a lot of stuff going on for the first time today. But he's got a lot of talent. So if things go his way, he could do some good stuff.
I noticed, Doug, by the way, visiting with Doug O'Neill here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, I noticed that you've given Wipe the Slate 2 sprint races before you stretch him out to today's mile in the 16th distance. You did the same thing with Hot Rod Charlie, giving him 2 sprints before he stretched out eventually. Is that kind of a philosophy and an approach that you use with these young horses as you're getting them started?
I mean, you'd like to, but sometimes it's just timing and it's the communication you have with the owners of the horse, just trying to get everyone on the same page. You know, once the horse is signaling to you that he's ready to run, then you're at the mercy of the condition book. What do they offer? What races are out there? So, but yeah, a couple sprints is, I think, a good thing to go by, you know, because once you go 2 turns, horses have to relax. They've got to really breathe comfortably on that first turn, or they're going to be out of air by the second turn. So, you know, you want them to be a little bit more mature and see the paddock and see the post parade and see the gate a couple times before you try those 2-turn races, because it does require some mature breathing. And it'll be interesting today. I think Wipe the Slate, he's got the air underneath him, and you know, though he lacks a 2-turn race, I think he's got the ability.
One thing's for sure, you're going to find out what you have with these two horses today, because this is a salty group in the Robert B. Lewis.
It really is. I mean, anytime you're talking Baffert, who just has an unbelievable barn, and he's so successful, and he knows how to get one ready for the big races. So, with Medina Spirit, there's no telling how good he is. And supposedly he's been out working Spielberg a little bit, who's you know, the Los Al Futurity winner. So those two look lights out, and then you got the John Sheriff's Parnelli, who I think could, you know, he's going to rebound from that last race where he kind of broke out a little bit and lost a lot of chance at the start. So, yeah, it's not a huge field, but very competitive field, and I think anybody that runs a good race today, you know, has every right to think, you know, we're on the road.
Doug, listen, you're always so gracious with your time, and really appreciate you spending a little visit with me here this morning. Good luck today and with all the horses moving forward.
You're the best. Thanks for having me, Mike. Keep up the great work.
All right, thanks, pal. Doug O'Neill here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, just really, I mean, you're going to find out what your horse is made of in a race like this today. And same thing with the Holy Bull and the Kitten's Joy and the maybe not so much the Swell because it's a sprint race, but, you know, if – if you have aspirations of bigger things up the road, you got to find out, and you got to start finding out now, because we're sitting here on January 30th, the first Saturday in May. We'll be here before we know it. That interview presented by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace what you love and wear your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'm back with more on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events. Gainsway Stallion Cara Conti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Cara Conti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Cara Conti standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Racing fans, although there is still no public admittance, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. And with the resumption of racing at Golden Gate Fields, the $5 Golden Hour Double and the $1 Golden Hour Pick 4 are now once again available. This Saturday, three-year-olds will go postward in an important prep to the Santa Anita Derby, the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis Stakes at a mile of 116. The Lewis winner will receive 10 Kentucky Derby qualifying points. Also on Saturday, older horses go a mile and 1/8 in the Grade 2 San Pasqual, an iconic stepping stone to the Santa Anita Handicap. Be sure to tune in early on both Saturday and Sunday as track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley will handicap each day's card beginning at 11:20 a.m. at santaanita.com/live. First post time this weekend is at 12:30.
HRRN is live online. Go to our website at horseracingradio.net to stream all of our broadcasts live or listen to the show archives anytime. Read our blogs, get the latest news, and see our entire broadcast schedule. It's all there at horseracingradio.net. And follow us on Twitter at HRRN and like our page on Facebook. Search Apple Podcasts for HRRN and download our latest shows. HRRN is home to racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is at horseracingradio.net.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Healthnetics CBD.
Be sure to check out the January 30th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. It's one you won't want to miss. And features include micro owner full experience. Yeah, through My Racehorse Stable, cancer survivor Raquel Nelson enjoys a bond with Horse of the Year Authentic. New ambassador Naja Thompson takes the helm of the New York Thoroughbred Breeders. Fans of Racing, Big Ass Fans delivers for breeding farms and tracks. And the 2021 Derby Dozen. Derby Fever Begins, and that is a piece by Byron King, taking a look at all the top three-year-olds along the road to the first Saturday in May. You can download a copy of the issue now from the Blood Horse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe at bloodhorse.com/subscribe. Well, it's a good thing I went into training this week for this three-hour show, the first ever three-hour equine forum, just about in the books. Many of you who follow us on social media, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, were privileged to see my workout video, little Rocky montage with me doing curls of my microphone, bicep curls, and I needed every ounce of that strength today as we stretched out in distance. But it has been such a delight, and I am so pumped up for this new format. Next week, another new segment comes back into the fold. It is Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. Again, if you have somebody in racing that you know is an unsung hero that does great work but doesn't always get the credit, send me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net. Tell me all about them. You can nominate a person that you know to Unsung Heroes and do that, mike@horseracingradio.net. My thanks to all of our guests who made this show possible this morning. It kicked off early with Jimmy Bell from Godolphin. Corey Lannery was here in the first half of the show as well. Chris Griffin from Sam Houston, trainer Mike McCarthy, and trainer Doug O'Neill just a short time ago. And, of course, each of you who took time to call in with that brand-new call-in segment that you'll hear every week right around 10:20, 10:25 Eastern time. Really appreciate you doing that, too. And for everybody who took time to weigh in on the poll question, thanks for weighing in. Looks like which of today's three-year-old stakes races is most likely to produce the Kentucky Derby winner? 51% of you saying it's the Holy Bull, 39% going with the Robert B. Lewis. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey handling all of our social media this morning, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to the Equine Forum presented by Healthnetics. All right, we'll do it. Go Steelers.